You know what time it is. Another edition of the Film Drunk Frotcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, for joining us. Live from the Frot Quarters in San Francisco. This, of course, your ear-raping, oven-dodging Ben. We have most of the crew tonight, plus a special guest, super blogger Vince. Vince, what are you doing? Stop breaking things.
Sorry.
You know what you should be? I'll consider that apology under review. Brendan's in the house.
Hey, guys, when are we making a Harlem Shake video?
Oh, my God.
I got asked that like three times.
How do I unsubscribe from anything to do with that at all? Is that possible?
I would like to do that.
I don't get why they're entertaining. I don't get why people make them.
They're really easy to make. It's just one simple editing move.
Yeah.
Is that why? Because they're easy?
They're really easy to make.
So can we do something that's harder that's good so people don't copy it?
Sure.
Okay, let's work on that.
How about a Frotcast?
Yeah,
copy. You hear that, internet? You try making a fucking Frotcast.
Copy this, assholes. Brett is not here, but we've replaced him with comedian Jason Dove. Welcome.
Hi. Hey. Thanks for having me, guys.
How easily Brett is replaced.
Well, Brett doesn't have 17 or 18 get Twin Galaxy records.
17.
What's the most recent one?
Well, I did them all at once.
Oh, okay.
And
literally at the same time.
Yeah. Well, all going at once. One video. I lucked out. Did it one take. And then I napped for 6 months.
You had to wait for Twin Galaxies to approve the record.
Yeah.
You didn't want to...
I got tight emails with those guys. Because I was communicating. I was sending files to them.
Are you trying to say you over a very short window of time, you were very devoted to setting these records, and then you've kind of...
Yeah, well, you just have that set up in life. I mean, when in your life do you have all the planets align... And you have enough time, devotion, a camera that works, comfortable chair,
no blisters on your fingers.
Tape. I was focused, and I just went for it. You know what I mean? And that you have to get it. You have to like bend your brain to get in.
We have to peak at the right time.
Yeah,
what it's all about.
Yeah, you got to get in the focus, and if you're not ready to handle that, then you back off from it.
You're the link. You're the specialist of the links.
A few on the links, ColecoVision, the PSP, and the Nintendo DS.
The handhelds are really
they're the easiest to shoot because I just set up a camera over my shoulder, you know what I mean? As opposed to having to get a box and a TV or whatever to plug it in, and I have a system with a million cartridges. You know what I mean?
Too many steps.
So it's a lot, you know. I just went for what I knew. You
did break California Games, but you didn't record it.
I did. Well, I broke...
The BMX.
What I remember is we challenged you.
It was inspiration.
Yeah, we challenged you to beat the BMX.
Divine.
And like 2 days later, you're like, oh yeah, I beat it.
I beat it, but I did not film it, so it might as well just be talking...
Therefore, it does not exist.
Yeah. Who cares? You know what I mean?
You can't. It doesn't matter what you know. It's what you can prove.
Exactly. That's the whole point of it. That's what you know. And
Denzel taught me that in Training Day.
Yeah.
Were you the cop in Training Day?
I mean, it was a tough lesson to learn.
I'm learning a lesson now.
You know, luckily I saved that Mexican girl from getting raped.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'd be right now.
Well, you'd be getting your shit pushed in.
I would. Well, I'd be getting my head just blown all over a bathtub, probably. Yeah.
Well, and, when you got left with the Mexican guys, I was a little worried for your health.
They they seemed nice at first, but then it's kind of just seemed like they were trying to trick me into doing stuff.
It's a rough day.
Yeah.
Rough first day.
You know when they seem nice, but there's something off about the way they're being nice to you? It's kind of one of those.
Yeah.
Like I knew it was going to turn at some point.
A couple things. One, we'll get to some conspiracy stuff with Jason Dove that we didn't finish.
Wait. You know what I like about Training Day that nobody talks about anymore? Is when Denzel's like, man, you got mad squabbles, boy. Because he just tell him that he can fight. I wish people used mad squabbles a lot more because that's a fantastic phrase.
There you go. Everyone, start using mad squabbles.
Man, you got mad squabbles.
You got to say it like that, though.
Yeah.
We'll try to get to some conspiracy theory stuff that everyone was so angry with us. We didn't complete the lizard people story. I think we will want to know exactly when they're coming back to Earth, and we'll get to that.
Well, or we could just do completely new ones.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There's so many conspiracy theories.
Oh,
if there's one's as good as the hollow moon living
That's a fringy.
But it's the one that seems the most conceivable. Like the most believable
sure,
one.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Has anyone ever been to the middle of the moon?
Yeah, I mean, apparently, allegedly, from these
lizard people.
Lizard people. I mean, they say it's inhabited. And they also say that the science involved... Oh, I don't, you see, you guys just like wound me up, man. Yeah, right. I know your tricks.
Next thing you know, you're going to be playing California Games BMX while talking conspiracy
yeah,
theories.
I'm yeah, I'm giving a lecture at UC Berkeley. No, I'm kidding. Not yet.
Frogcast.com is updated, so we're going to keep going through iTunes and Podbean for a little, but if you go to frogcast.com as well... You can get the episodes there. We're trying to transition over to our own little home
mm-hmm.
on our own little corner of the mm-hmm. internet. We got some emails as well. Do you want to get to those, Vince?
Sure, I can start off with an email.
We got a bunch. Just a word of advice, so we'll read them. Keep them short and sweet. Sometimes they're a little long. Just saying.
There were several that were eliminated from contention this week because it was like, oh my God, this is so long.
We read them all, but to read them live. In the frog quarters.
It takes me more than 3 minutes of reading time. Probably not going to read.
Yeah, we do read them, though.
Yeah.
We read them just on our own time.
All right. Frotsman. We seem to see eye to eye in terms of alcohol preferences for the most part. Having never tried Fernet Branca, I asked Vince what it tastes like, and this past weekend found out that he was right, just like grass clippings. Technically, I said scope and grass clippings, but that is what Fernet Branca tastes like.
Grass clippings, and then you wash with scope or combined?
Like if you just took a shot glass of scope and dumped some grass clippings in there, that's what it tastes like.
Mm.
Yeah. Just a bit of an out there kind of question, but in terms of drinks, what is the grossest tasting thing any of you guys, frot guest, have ever drank? I have a few answers for that.
Proceed.
All right. So there's Mad Dog 2020, which is a hobo wine that I drank the first time I got drunk. And pretty much anything, anytime you combine like cloyingly sweet with low quality alcohol, you get a pretty gross thing going on. So I think Mad Dog 2020 is up there. I think like the blue Four Loko, one of the Four Lokos was pretty awful.
Four Loko's really bad.
Yeah.
It tastes like someone just punching you right in the mouth every sip, right?
It's just like some weird battery. And whenever you drink an energy drink type of thing, it's like it's all caffeine and then just ungodly amounts of sugar because caffeine is just pure bitterness.
And then when it's 12% of 12% alcohol, that's no joke.
That's like wine.
Yeah. Really?
It's like a big tall boy of wine and Red Bull.
Yeah.
You shotgun it too. It's like you're at a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say two things. First of all, on my football team, it was tradition that on your 21st birthday, you did the Four Horsemen, which is Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, Johnny Walker, and Jose Cuervo, all in like a brandy snifter.
Oh, my God.
And you just had to... That was really bad. I remember doing that, and then I don't remember much after that.
Yeah.
I was with Vince that night.
Speaking of,
And then the other thing I want to say was in defense of Fernet, the first time I tried it, I remember a distinct thought. I remember where I was. I remember everything about it. And I was behind the bar because it was after closing at this bar and where I worked. And the bartender was like, pour me a Fernet. And I passed it to her. She's like, pour yourself one too. And I took it and I remember everything went through my mind. Just like, why in God's name would anyone ever want to drink this? This is awful. This is the worst thing. It is an acquired taste.
I've drank it many
times.
Not
acquired it?
And it is terrible.
I like it. I have a bottle in my bar at home. I'll sip it after dinner sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty awful.
It's a digestif. And it's actually excellent if you have eaten too much. And you're like, you have that like, oh God, I hate myself.
Do you ever have a Underberg as well?
No.
Is that what it's called?
I've heard it's a similar...
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah.
I find it more of an expeltif. It just helps you expel things.
Yeah, that too.
Like expletives.
Yeah.
Specifically.
I don't shoot it, though, when I've had a big meal. I just sip it, and I tend to feel better.
As for, like, 21st birthday dare-type shots, I think the Prairie Fire is pretty bad, which is just tequila with Tabasco sauce in it. And, there's also just the mat shot, like at in San Luis. Yeah. There used to be a place called Bulls. I think it's Bulls or something. Bull something. And they'd make Bull Sweat, which is like basically just a mat shot where the bartender, the mat where they drink all their, make their drinks on, and they just lift it up and pour it into a shot glass.
Oh. That's gross.
Yeah. That's oof.
There's a couple that, I mean, most malt liquor 40s are pretty bad. I remember I didn't take it, but I was living in Australia. This is probably 10 years ago more, and it was two friends' birthday, and we made them do a what we call probably other people have heard of it, a cement mixer, where it's the Bailey's Irish Cream and then something else.
Yeah, I forget what it is, but it makes it coagulate.
Yeah, instant coagulation, and we made them mix it up in their mouth and then spit it out like a cement mixer and then drink it again.
Oh. I didn't hear about the spitting out and then having to drink again.
Well, yeah, because that's the cement mixer part.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and one of our friends who was doing this, who had a notoriously weak stomach, definitely vomited almost instantaneously.
Jeez.
But it was very fun to watch because then the spitting it out, was where it coagulates instantaneously. It's weird. Even if you just pour them together, it'll coagulate. It's
like those two things in Die Hard with a Vengeance where you put the two things together and the bomb, it turns it into a bomb.
Yeah, a separate.
Yeah.
They're perfectly safe. Together, it'll blow up Times Square.
It'll blow a chair leg off the ground.
Blow your mouth.
And then another one that comes to mind was we used to go down to Mexico for just for fun or for fraternity bullshit events, formals and stuff. Vince, do you remember there was a drink or like a bottle of liquor there that was in plastic?
Oh, Viva Via.
Viva
Via. Yes.
It was basically gasoline.
It didn't even say whether it was tequila or what it was. It was just like a bottle of clear liquid that was...
That was like 99 cents for a handle worth. Or $1.99 or something.
Yeah.
And it tasted like someone just... It was unfiltered gasoline. I would not recommend it.
No.
But that's another one that comes to mind.
I was in a bar in Germany one time. I think I was like so drunk I got separated from my friends. And I wandered into this bar with a bunch of Russian people and like one guy that spoke English. And, you know, I stood out there because I mean, I stand out anywhere, but especially in Europe, people a little bit smaller. So this one guy's like, my big American friend, you know, and like calls me over. And I just remember they gave me this drink that I'm pretty sure was vodka, but it was like this inky black.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called. It's like vodka with
like
that flavored with black licorice, basically.
Yeah, that was gross. That was definitely gross.
I had one about a month ago. I went on a tour of the Ankerstein Brewery, and my buddy works there. And I didn't eat anything all day, which is a classic move before you go to a brewery.
Right.
Try to eat something, anything.
Way more bang for your buck, though.
Totally. Well, I had all the beer. It felt great. I've been a drinking pro I've been sponsored for at least 18, I don't know, some 20 years or something. Anyway, I had four beers. Fantastic. And then we go to the little secret part because my buddy works there. He breaks out the rare Ankerstein like vodka gin stuff. We're in this little cubby hole room and we're doing like shots and in this room, and then I went back to his house afterwards and had one drink with this weird gin and sat down to play an N64 GoldenEye.
Nice.
15 seconds of it, I went completely just went through like nausea full like you're just like fourth dimension. I ran to the sink and just was like, just throwing up everywhere. And then had to go to the bathroom where I stay there for an hour.
Wow.
And
from
then,
one,
that's a long time.
From one drink.
Wow.
My body was just like, no.
They should not put
demons,
that on the label.
Turn this plane around. Yeah, but are you telling me there's demons in this vodka?
That's Jesse Ventura. For those of you that are, for the uninitiated, he came to visit.
I did tell, I was probably an unauthorized retelling of the story, but you had a friend who had to break up with his girlfriend because she like hooked up with Mark Hamill at a sci-fi convention.
that's a friend of a friend. Yeah.
Well, way to ruin the punchline.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, it's, yeah.
What was the, well, I mean, was there any backstory?
Gosh, this is so funny. the way that I could get it wrong, but this the story is a little bit like this. That I want to say that he broke up with the girl. The girl cheated on him, and they broke up. And then she called him like a month later, and she was like, "Oh, you might. I think you know. You might want to get checked. You might have an STD." And he was, and she was like, "Who did you know?" Like, asked her about like who he, where'd you get this STD kind of thing, and she told him that she went to the some convention, and fucking Luke Skywalker was hanging out there, and somehow he's I don't know, somehow he did it. He did it.
It's a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Oldest trick in the book.
These droids are in my escort. Yeah. I don't.
This is not the condom you're looking for.
Exactly. Maybe there it was. I knew he'd find it.
And he had and he has a tainted lightsaber.
There's a disturbance in his force.
So many jokes could be made.
I know, and really, I mean, really, really. I made one that his cell phone is a droid. she told him, and he was just like, "That's like the weirdest."
Yeah. Weirdest thing. Like, not what I was expecting to hear. Yeah. He's sneaking out in the morning. Where are you going? The Dagobah system.
Yeah. Totally.
Fucking Luke Skywalker.
His hand fell off while we
were having sex. What if he just told him that to like piss him off more? He's just like, yeah, fuck some other guy. And guess what? It was Luke Skywalker.
Right. Totally. The rapper? From 2 Live Crew.
Right.
Uncle Luke.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clear that up.
Okay. I can see how people would have gotten confused.
Yeah.
Speaking of Miami, good for Miami, standing up to the NC2A.
What'd they do? What happened?
Well, I mean, if you want to go check out like Deadspin and SB Nation, there's been some good coverage. Bobby Bigwheel, who I believe is a lawyer, did some pretty good breakdown of like how
I always really like Dan Wetzel from Yahoo as well.
How outrageously the NCAA is overstepping, but essentially like the NCAA was trying to get dirt on Miami. So it starts with this guy Nevin Shapiro, right? He was basically hooking up players with cash, prostitutes. He was inviting them over to his big mansion in Miami. You know, improper benefits. This shit happens at a lot of schools, but he kept detailed records of everything that happened.
Well, he got caught for the Ponzi stuff.
Well, then his Ponzi scheme crumbled, and what he did was he rolled over on everyone because he claims that all these people he considered his friends, and he started putting in calls to people saying, "Hey, bail me out," and they said no, and so he rolled over on everybody basically and just unleashed all these claims of improper benefits. So the NCAA comes in to investigate, right? But what just came to light was that his attorney, Nevin Shapiro's attorney, during bankruptcy court, was also on the NCAA's payroll. So the NCAA is paying his lawyer to feed them information to give them more, which is like so far outside their boundary. I mean, it's gross misconduct.
Well, they were asking him specific questions about the NCAA violations.
Right. They're trying to subpoena people. The NCAA is trying to that's like your girlfriend's dad, like trying to subpoena you for like information, you know? I mean, it's like, it's so bizarre. There's like absolutely no jurisdiction there. So anyway, so Miami had, before all this happened, Miami had self-reported and said, "Hey, we found out, here was some stuff that's going." They docked themselves scholarships. They completely, they disqualified themselves from any bowl game and all that kind of stuff. So it's a very common thing as well. If a school has minor to medium infractions, they'll say, "Hey, we uncovered this stuff ourselves. We're going to impose these punishments on ourselves. And, you know, this is the mea culpa." And the NCAA generally says, "Yeah, that's okay." Well, the NCAA is obviously really, A, trying to throw the book at Miami, and B, knows they look like total assholes for just being, you know, like stepping way outside their boundaries and all this stuff. So they hit Miami with a notice of allegations last night. And Miami came back and basically said, "Hey, we reported everything we found. And if you want to like really do battle with us on all this other shit that you found like through illegal means, then like we'll see you in court," which is pretty cool because the NCAA is
the worst.
I said good day.
Organization ever.
Yeah. I said,
I'm sure this was compelling podcasting. Go check out Deadspin and SB Nation's coverage of it. It was very good. You'll get a much more complete picture of how kind of outrageous the NCAA is asserting its authority.
Well, I mean, like I said, I like a lot of Dan Wetzel stuff too on Yahoo, where it just sort of discussing the hypocrisy and ridiculousness of the NCAA and all of the bowl presidents or the bowl CEOs and the league presidents on how
you, right. Well, here's what it's escalating towards, right? Is there's no denying that college sports is this multi-billion-dollar industry. The NCAA classifies itself as a nonprofit organization, which is just complete and utter bullshit. The problem is college sports clearly needs some sort of governing body, but at the same time, the whole amateurism thing is just not working. Because it's just it's sort of creating the black market just by virtue of it happening.
I actually just watched that South Park the other night where the crack baby basketball.
Oh yeah, student athletes.
Right. I mean that whole thing's such a crock, right? Yeah. So, but to give a balanced argument, the other side of it is like, well, what do? You can't just blow up the NCAA. You need some sort of governing body.
Well, outside of that, the suggestion that I liked was the Olympic model, where if. Like Olympic athletes can now get paid whatever sponsors will pay them.
Yeah.
They're not getting paid by the corrupt IOC. That's right. They're getting paid by whatever Speedo and Kellogg's and Nike and whatever
corporations.
Yeah, so the corporations are like, cool, we can pay these players, and it's fine, and it's not necessarily coming out of the pockets of the current entities that are all worried about their bottom line anyway. Yeah.
True story. In college, my position coach had some t-shirts made, and it was like determined to be like 3 t-shirts, and I had to pay $200 to charity or else I would have been suspended for 2 games.
Wow.
Which is what, a 5th-year season?
Yeah. Wait, for $10 t-shirts?
My coach gave me.
Wait, why'd you have to pay so much for them?
Oh, because I'd like given them away or thrown them away or whatever.
How dare you?
But they just like,
sanctity of the game is ruined.
But I was an amateur.
Your amateur status has been compromised.
Yeah. It was the cough up the dough.
Yeah. But I had to give it. I didn't give it to the Red Cross. And this is like 2002 after they'd mismanaged all the 9/11 donations.
Yes.
And they were like, donate to the Red Cross. And I was like, suck my dick. So I think I donated to like the pet shelter.
Did you say it just like that?
I did.
They like that pet shelter.
You'll suck my dick.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe is the inquiring officer.
Someone sent me this clip. I thought it was pretty funny. It's the screenwriter from the screenwriter who wrote Identity Thief or Identity. Yeah, the one with Jason Bateman and.
Oh God!
And Melissa McCarthy that got
just don't call her a hippo, Vince.
Yeah, he's also written his credits include Scary Movie 3, Scary Movie 4, Superhero Movie, The Hangover 2, Identity Thief, and he's also writing The Hangover 3. This is Craig Mazin, and
what makes me so angry is that guy's just printing money for like wiping his butt with paper. And
hey, who is
you're gonna feel? Get ready to feel sorry for him because he goes on an epic.
I'm going to feel sorry for him by the end?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
What were you going to ask, Brendan?
I was going to say, I didn't see Identity Theft because it reminded me of that movie Due Date, which wasn't that also Jason Bateman?
Yeah. And no. It was Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, it was Robert Downey Jr. Yeah.
And Zach Galifianakis. Oh, I walked out. I have not walked out of many movies. I walked out of that
I didn't
one.
Think that one was that bad. I mean, it was
good. You're not supposed to pay to see that in the theater, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, I don't know.
You watch that at home on HBO. You're not going to be...
I just thought that one was like whatever.
It yeah. You're not going to love it, but you're not going to necessarily turn
Zach
it off.
Zach Galifianakis' character was just unbearable. And you wanna,
I can't argue with that.
His face.
That's what you want to aim for.
Oh, yeah. Grating and unbearable.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are great reviews.
Arclight. And loved it. I saw it at like a 5:30 show. It was pretty full. And
this is with he's with John August as the host.
Friends movie. In this case, 2 Friends movies, because I wanted it to be good for you, and I really wanted it to be good for Melissa. And Jason Bateman, I know, but he's fine. Whatever, Jason Bateman. But I wanted it to be good for both of you, and it was really good for both of you. I was very, very...
He wrote the movie?
John August is doing the podcast with this guy, Craig Mazin, who wrote the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very excited to see it.
Thank you. I had a weird week.
Yeah, I know you did. So tell us about that.
Well, I will. So we'll start with the good news. The good news is the movie is a big success. and the audience of mouth were a two. But I.
What are you doing?
Time. Not everybody, but most of them. And that's why probably if you look back a couple of podcasts ago when we talk about stolen identity or identi-weenie, as I like to call it.
I was also going with identi-thiefy.
Identi-thiefy. Identi-thiefy. When I was talking
about
identi-thiefy,
I was going.
Like, oh, and you know, I think the critics will like it. Oh, Craig. Oh, stupid, stupid Craig. So my love affair with critics continues. Not big fans of mine. And this is the bad part of the week. And I want to talk about this in a way that perhaps people
can you pause real quick?
Is he gonna break
I like it when critics are spoken about as this like monolithic entity, mm-hmm. which is like, that has its own specific sort of thing they're looking for, which maybe to a certain extent is okay. But the whole idea of like, critics just don't like me. It's like, yeah, because you write shitty movies.
Yeah, where they're like, oh, fans loved it, but not the critics. It's like, that's because fans didn't get to leave feedback afterwards. Like, they just pay. Like, if you buy a food at a meal, you can't just be like, oh, that person loved it. It's like, well, ask them about what they said. Ask them whether they liked the steak. You can't just be like, oh, they loved it because they bought it.
Not to mention if someone self-reports as a fan, that's sort of an inaccurate sample size where it's like, oh, well, the fans love it. Well, yeah, they love it. That's the definition of a fan.
It's always weird to me, too, that...
The fans hated it.
That you could write knowingly shitty movies. I mean, if you truly believe that...
He doesn't believe that, though.
So he lives in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
Seriously, if you're writing...
It's called Hollywood.
Fair enough.
All anticipating. Right. Here's what I don't want to do. I am not going to discuss... why the critics didn't like it, why so many of them seemed very, very angry about it.
Angry.
I'm not going to talk about Rex Reed. I'm not going to talk about the state of film criticism or try and explain any of it. I'm not going to do any of that. Not interested. The critics will continue to do what they do, and I will continue to do what I do. And there's nothing that either party is going to say to each other that's going to change anything. So it goes. What I want to talk about is
how terrible
it all made me feel.
Oof.
And I want to talk about it because this is a podcast for screenwriters. And some of you out there are trying to be screenwriters and in success will have a movie in theaters. Some of you already are and have had movies in theaters. All of us who have movies in theaters, me more often than some, but all of us, will come face to face with bad reviews at some point or another. Or at all points. And I am going to be very, very frank.
He's an excessive prefacer.
It feels terrible.
He's like the carrot top of movies.
I hated it because I think in part I loved the movie and I was proud of what I had done. I had watched it with people and I saw how Melissa and Jason had...
I wish it was shorter. He goes on to like quote Nietzsche and it's pretty...
So he's kind of delusional. If you make
very
that movie,
sensitive, put it that way.
If you make that movie, how can you go home and be like, "I just wrote a literary masterpiece"?
I mean, I think that the fact that this guy gets movies made and completed and then shown to millions of people with a huge budget, and he gets decent stars and the whole production, the whole
probably
thing,
a good amount of money too.
So you're and he's emotionally connected to these pieces of art that he is creating, despite whether it's any good to what critics or any or people or audience actually want to see.
Humans?
Yeah, humans.
Or humansies.
Sure. Or yeah, both. Both test audiences.
But just when it's one thing.
I think humansies might be where they get test audiences.
Yeah.
It's recruited making entirely from the humansie population.
When your resume is Scary Movie 3, 6, 8, Superman movie, or whatever, Superhero Movie 3. You just have to know. It's like, just take the money and be happy and realize that the critics are going to take a dump on you.
I feel like it takes a certain, like Jason was saying, to see it all the way through. Like the Patton's famous bit about deathbed, the bed that eats people, where it's like, where you think of that idea and you just, and you're, like, you can quiet the self-editing part of your brain so much that you can just think of that movie and finish writing it and get it and see it all the way to completion. I feel like they've been able to quiet the self-editing part of their personality so well that it makes them super sensitive to that kind of criticism.
But his movies aren't even original.
No.
He's not writing some original thing.
I mean, he's getting cameras together. Everybody shows up. Everybody's playing along world.
He just puts words onto the paper.
He sees people enjoying themselves because of the thing that he did.
Yeah.
And then that's all he sees for like 6 months. And then after that's done, everybody just takes a big fat dump on his head him what an asshole he is.
What he fails to notice is that all of his fan mail is written in like half uppercase and half lowercase letters.
Yo, boo-boo, you wrote some dope shit! Exclamation point.
Right. And shit spelled like S-H-Y-T. And you're like, that doesn't even abbreviate it. I don't know why they just decide to spell it differently.
Yo, and like, and then like is L-Y-K.
Yeah.
Like. That's why I think he's like the Carrot Top of movie filmmaking, because it's Carrot Top. Everybody shits on Carrot Top because he's like this prop hacky whatever, but the fans come go and see it.
Yeah.
And he does interviews. He's like, I don't know why everybody hates me.
Yeah.
Everybody hates
me. If you got a show in Vegas, I mean, you're doing well for yourself.
Exactly. You know? So this guy's, if you got Jason Bateman, you can't be.
Well, first of all, I don't know. I have to come to the Carrot Top's defense slightly. I think that Carrot Top was not the worst thing in the world.
No,
I know
he's
a
treat
problem.
Him like that.
Yeah, for sure. Chuck Klosterman had an interesting piece about Nickelback a while back, and what a weird thing it must be to where they go out every night and they play for like 20,000 people who will who just want to fucking wring the shit stains out of their underwear into their mouths because they fucking love Nickelback so much. And then every day, all he does is do radio interviews where every question is, why do you think people fucking hate you so much? And it's like, how could you possibly wrap your mind around that
Creed.
Sort of?
Yeah, Creed is, exactly. I mean, that's like a paralleled.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually about Creed and Nickelback.
Guy Fieri's going through that same thing, man. People love him and people hate him at the same time.
I don't know how you could hate Guy Fieri. I think he's hilarious. Like,
what? Are you serious?
I mean, not like in a
jokes.
In a Louis C.K. kind of way, but he's a fucking cartoon.
He is a cartoon. People,
it's like hating the bad guy in wrestling. Like how, his shtick.
Sure, but to me, he gives me this instant visceral reaction with his super bleached hair and all his jewelry.
It just makes me laugh.
All his lifestyle.
I got to object, Vince. It's a guy who went to college in Southern California. You know several Guy Fieri's and you hate him.
I feel like he's over the top that it's sort of like, I feel it
makes up for his.
I feel like he's not doing it earnestly.
I don't know.
No, I disagree.
Like, it's a character?
I think he's almost like he's borderline performance art. The stuff that he makes.
You're giving him way too much credit.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Flavortown. He has a giant thing on the top of his. As you walk in the restaurant, there's a big mural. This is Welcome to Flavortown. Fucking priceless.
He's the mayor.
Yeah.
mean.
Oh, the one thing that bugs the shit out of me is the fact that like he'll go on shows and he'll be like, oh, it's Fieri.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, your name is Guy Fieri. You fucking changed it to Fieri. You're not
changed
even Italian.
It three times
you're
now.
Fucking correcting people on the pronunciation
what's
of your name. That's
name?
Not even Fieri.
F-E-R-R-Y. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So he's how can you like that's not
well, that's
performance
that's
art.
Obnoxious.
I think when you get to that kind of level of status, where you could change, where you can correct people. No, it's called it's Sting or whatever. You know, where you're correcting people. Like you got to play along with my imaginary shit. Yeah. Like the prince. Yeah. Now I'm a symbol. Like you got to like.
I don't even have a name, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Guy Fieri. I think my life would be less rich if Guy Fieri was more self aware and we didn't have Guy Fieri to make fun of.
He serves a purpose.
Yes.
That's for sure.
A purpose of getting his Lambo stolen?
Yeah.
Sweet Lambo.
It's one of the things that he does.
Did we ever play the Max Wade song on the broadcast?
Probably.
It's good.
It is a good song.
Black Beanie.
Max Wade attempted murder.
Peacoat Lamborghini.
Yeah. People shouldn't rap about what clothes they're wearing, especially when they're white. Especially when they're rapping about a pea coat.
There's certain circles where the pea coat's kind of gangster, though. There are.
Which,
like on the docks and stuff.
It's the dudes who they only wear like beanies and like baggy sweatpants, and then they wear the unbuttoned pea coat. It's like the really sort of like, it's almost like the Northern California equivalent of the 90s trend of, you know, Chucks and Dickies and flannels.
Okay.
Like sort of the working class clothing.
Like yeah. Juggalos?
No. I think Juggalos are a whole different thing.
Okay.
Like if you're a...
They rarely wear clothing.
If you were a Marin County Juggalo, you'd be rocking the pea coat hard.
Sure.
Yeah.
Face paint. I can see this.
It's big with the Islander gangsters.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jason, like we said, people were really angry with us that we didn't finish all the conspiracies. So it might not be the lizard people. What are the new ones? Are you the working on? Are
what
you
conspiracy theories are the kids talking about?
Are there any new ones that you're working on right now?
People don't want to talk about conspiracies.
But we do.
I like.
Well, that's the first rule of conspiracy: is that you don't talk about conspiracy.
If any SWAT team comes roping in the window, you'll know why.
I'm wearing a wire just in case, guys. Hey, just don't record this.
You always wear a wire, though, right?
I always do.
And that's why you have... That's not just a parrot on your shoulder. It has a video camera.
It is. That, don't look at the parrot. No, that's
not in the eyes.
Rule two of conspiracy. Don't look at the parrot.
So are there any new ones that you've discovered?
Man, everybody's talking about this crazy stuff, man, on the internet.
Have you been on there?
They're talking this crazy. They're getting wacky on the internet about this crazy stuff. There's new ones. Gosh. Okay. So I don't even know where to begin.
What's a new one that you found that you looked into and you really like it? Like it's
intriguing.
Yeah.
Sandy Hook, guys.
Ooh. All right.
Old man Sandy Hook. It's been driving me crazy. Well,
the cop just came out and was telling people that everybody to shut the hell up. That
of course, Vance, Sergeant Vance. Yeah. He's the guy, main guy. There's just so much. There's so much with this thing. And you have to suspend. I've just been the guy that Alex, who does the show with me on the Eddie Lair
Huffman,
show,
right? Yeah. He's been on.
Yeah, I credit him. He's done so much work. He's got a lot of time on his hands, and he's shown me so much that it blows my mind. So much so. And it's just all unanswered stuff. Like there's just so much the official story and what is. All the actual evidence that's come out and the people that are involved, the trickery, the straight sweet trickery, seems so weird and like just things don't add up. One of the main things that caught my eye was all of the news stations went to this one guy, and I'll be real brief on it because it could go on all night. But this guy named Gene Rosen, right? And he was like a neighbor. So you have the school, you have the on a one long road, starting at the school at the end, and then you have the fire department where all the ambulances were staged. That's where all of the news footage, any footage that you see live from that day was all shot at the fire department, not at the school. And in that footage, there's all these people just walking around you don't know. And there's been many multiple shots from on the ground and from this helicopter. And people have analyzed this footage. Well, the first witness that came out and talked to everybody before they had all of the parents and stuff to go talk with this guy named Gene Rosen. And Gene Rosen is this old guy. He's kind of weird and creepy. And he's wearing this vest. And he goes in. His story is that six kids and were in his lawn. And he walks out and these six kids are in his lawn. And they're like, he didn't know what was going on.
And yeah, I read about that.
And he brings these kids into his house.
Yeah.
Well, he tells one news place that it's a bus driver was with these kids, and then he tells another news place that it was not a female bus driver, but this guy, and he was yelling at him. And his story is like slightly different. He did for every news station, and in the middle of it, he'd start like kind of crying, but then just go back into like talking, like into his thing, that his story that he had these kids. They were at his house for 30 minutes and gave him stuffed animals and this whole
thing. Yeah. He fed them and gave him stuffed animals, and then he had parents like pounding on his door asking if their kids were there and all that stuff.
They didn't have no parents. Asking, basically, they showed up like he just had them. But now, if everybody was staged at the fire department, this is like a block, not even a block like a driveway's length away from his house. These kids had to walk past where all the cops and all the shit was to go to his house, right? Claims that he's there. He's barricading, never called the cops. And he tells a story. Everybody goes with the story. Every news station goes with the story. And at the time that he claimed that all this shit was happening, there's the footage in the helicopter. There's footage of all this stuff of him actually at the fire department talking to the media and doing whatever. That story that he made that went out was all the timing of basically when he was supposed to be dealing with these kids. He was at the fire department being filmed by the helicopter.
So there's this crazy attention whore dude there.
So that's one thing. He also has a badge. Okay. But here's the other thing. There's photographs of him wearing basically
a prep
badge.
What does that tell you other than that there was some crazy attention whore dude?
Basically, it goes so far that I can't believe I'm taking all this. I'm sorry. I'm doing this. It goes so far as that people think that this was a drill, that they do drills all the time. I worked on a drill. I saw a drill. I worked at a job and I saw clearance to see a drill televised in 2004. And I know what a drill looks like, so I'm kind of aware of that kind of thing. So people think they do drills all the time, that they just pulled a drill. Maybe kids were killed. I don't know. But that's what the story is. The thing is I believe everything that I see on television is that they killed all these people. There's all these deaths. But if they control an environment like a drill where they have these actors and they have all these things set up and this Gene Rosen's filmed being told what to do, all this footage, too, of this.
What would be the point of that?
To manipulate the people's emotions and go and change laws, Vince. I mean, that's what staged shit does. And yeah. That's the Gulf of Tonkin, right? Ventura, Gulf of Tonkin. What's caused Vietnam is a staged event.
That one's a... some of them...
But there's a clear motive. They're like, oh, we wanted to go to war. What was the motive here? Like, oh, we want a passive, mostly ineffective assault weapons ban.
Well, no, because people... This is where it gets crazy. This is where I'm freaked out about it, is that this is... they say when they talk about the Sandy Hook stuff is that it's in line with disrupting stuff so far. So because, yeah, they're going to start attack. Once you change the effects of taking the Bill of Rights and stuff away, once you start picking at that, then people start to get weird about it. Not me, not you. I don't own a gun. I don't think about guns. But, like, other people, you know what I mean? Once you start rocking the boat, basically. When you start having drones in the sky over San Francisco.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with, like,
I like your conspiracy theories. That one is a stretch for me.
It's a stretch. Because the thing about it is that you have to suspend... all reality of thinking of things.
You're gonna have to suspend your idea of gravity.
Yes,
you're gonna have to suspend your idea that Jesus isn't real.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to suspend the idea that that one's a stretch to me.
Well, I don't see what the, I still don't. Yeah. There's no motive there. That's just like fucking with
there
you.
Is well, no
okay,
motive.
But
that's
why?
So there is no motive.
Well, why do people? No one does anything about a motive.
So if this was a big fake thing,
uh-huh.
Who would have planned it and why?
This is this is what these internet conspiracy guys.
The lizard
guys,
people?
The lizard people. Now, well, I guess it falls in that line of agenda. You have a government that is in control. So you have to pretend that everything you see on TV, all the internet news that we see, all of this stuff has some kind of – they're pledging allegiance to some kind of story. And that's basically – so when you hear of the Adam Lanza story and the Sandy Hook thing and all this stuff, they have control of the news so they can control the story that goes out.
The government.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're basically watching. I can't determine what's real and what's fake. So that's how Orwellian is it? That's where the Sandy Hook.
I never buy the whole like the government controls the news. Like I know way too many news people and work. Sort of in news for
I also,
that to
I also
hold
know
water.
That,
well, it's not every
in
story.
The loosest interpretation.
Well, and also, realize that money rules everything, and the government's not paying these news stations the amount of money that they would be making.
Wu-Tang was right the whole time.
You got to diversify your bonds.
Cash rules everything around me.
Cream. Get the money.
Dollar bills, y'all.
But I'm trying to remember, there's other... other things.
Well, that one's not cool. That one's like, that one's kooky and not that interesting to me.
Oh, and it's Yeah, that one's a stretch.
That one's like your basic, the government gonna take your guns. Well, and it's like, they don't really get anything out of that.
Look, because, you know, I understand that our government is not, we're pretty much okay at a high level of just drone bombing people.
Yes.
But our own population, to do, like Vince said, to change laws that probably won't change and won't really do much.
Okay, well, I can understand the government being like, hey, we want this country's oil, so we're going to act like they have weapons, and then we can go and get their oil. That's a clear motive.
We want to pass
some shitty gun control
laws. What the conspiracy theorists are, it can be conceived as or thought of as absolute paranoia in the sense that the government is acting kind of like with propaganda and things like that in a way to manipulate people's emotions. So they do.
Into doing what?
Into basically submitting their rights in the same way that you have a 9/11 and you say, hey, we're going to go get these guys. These guys are over there. And everybody's like, let's go get those.
We're cool with the Patriot Act.
Exactly. And the problem is under Obama, he's done the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act, which extends the Patriot Act. And this is what gets rid of due process, where you can detain people who are quote unquote threats to the country, and then you can.
What the hell does
that
have to do with
because
some kids getting shot at a school?
Because what's happened is what people consider 9/11 is partially a drill or part of whatever they did this thing inside job or whatever. If they do that for and their motive is to go have all these wars or whatever, if you use the same diagram and use it in small incidences like the Gifford shooting, the Batman shooting, and now this Sandy Hook shooting. Mm-hmm. If these are all, because people suspect, the same people that think about the Sandy Hook thing see this pattern starting with these things. It's the same pattern, it's the same person, and one lone person. The other thing about the Sandy Hook thing, there's the coroner filed for he was threatening to quit. He had his job for like 30 years, and he threatened to quit if they didn't sign in Connecticut law that they could, if there was a homicide with kids, that they were allowed to hold on to the records for the kids and not release them. And this guy, Carver, who is the coroner who allegedly did all of the autopsies on these kids, signed this shit in like a year and a half before Sandy Hook. There's also six websites that were all predate Sandy Hook. Six of them, not one, like not coincidentally. So there's just like all these weird things.
Six websites to what?
Have memorial websites like a month before Sandy Hook took place. It was a scheduled drill. They'd also done drills in Sandy Hook. Alex Huffman looked at all of the Connecticut records for all of the, you know, they claimed that they did a surveillance system like in the school. And they claim that they got all this funding from the state. And he went and checked the state records, and there was no Sandy Hook on any of the state records to see any transfer of money. And it's all on the Connecticut government website. There's all other schools, but Sandy Hook's not on there. There's no surveillance footage. There's no 911 calls from anybody. The only photograph of the 600 students that were to inhabit Sandy Hook, there's only two photographs of 13 kids with their arms like over. And those are the only kids. It was all planned to be basically as a drill, and they have all these people. I've seen these drills, so this is why.
Explain a drill that you've seen that's similar to this.
I didn't have access. I was working 2004. I was working at a Maryland Emergency Management Agency, which is a part of FEMA, but it's the Maryland branch. And I just happened to be doing some work through a temp agency, and I didn't have clearance, but I was at this thing. And
Jason, just like that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I didn't have clearance, and so I was at this base, and they had these TVs, and I said, why are the, you know, I'm fucking never been inside of a base. I'm seeing all this like stuff I'm not supposed to see. And I'm like, why do you have TVs in all the place? And they're like, well, if the news reports some shit that's wrong, we can call and change them. And they had like a control room that looked like NORAD control room with three giant screens and all these seats where if like a disaster, tornado, or some kind of shit, all these people would meet up, and this was the command center for the state of Maryland. Well, anyway, they were doing a test, and you can look it up on the internet, and I can't remember the name of the test, but it was in 2004, or 2003, that it was done in three different cities, in Chicago, Seattle, and in Vancouver. And they basically did a fake SARS outbreak in these three cities. And they had hospitals shut down. They had doctors and like old retired generals playing the president. And they had a fake CNN. And I was watching this feed, and it was a 5-day test, and they're basically simulating a SARS breakout. And they would have this news station that was a fake CNN that looked so fucking real. And I was sitting there working on this website for 8 hours, and this thing was blaring, and the death toll is up to 80,000 here in Vancouver, over to you in Chicago. And it was going on like War of the Worlds kind of shit. And I remember one of the guys walked in there like laughing at me because I didn't have clearance to see the shit. And I was just like, it ruined my days at work because I was just like, everybody's dying. It's, you know, it's sad as shit, you know, over to you in Seattle, you know. And so I'd seen that stuff. So I knew, I've known about like these drills since basically 2004. So when the Sandy Hook thing, when people started talking about, oh, it's a drill, and then there's this website that, the thing actually exists where there's actors who go to crisis things. There's videos online of other drills, crises. So crises, I guess. So that's why I kind of. So it sounds crazy, but if you can actually believe, suspend your mind and follow the money for a minute, and think that if all of these news organizations are, because I mean, 50 years ago, like I was saying with the Kennedy thing, and when they reported the Kennedy thing, they were in it. There was about 300 people. The documents have shown that there was like 300 people in the CIA that were in the news then, 50 years ago.
There's a lack of a specific causal motive, I have a hard time. Like, I mean, it's just like there was no real.
Well, if you allow me to connect the dots here, I think what we're seeing. If and you can disagree with me here, but I'm just trying to follow this, that these events, you're talking about Giffords, Dark Knight, and Aurora, Sandy Hook, are all staged for the Obama administration to do a major crackdown on firearms in the United
States. And it's not even necessary. It's not necessarily.
But they haven't really done that.
I just connect the dots, man.
And what do they get out of that? Like, why would they even care?
They're just changing laws, I think. But
that's
not one that loses money for the gun manufacturers.
Yeah. They're trying to disarm the population. They're trying to target people who own guns.
But
that's the whole point. The whole point is why don't those people have
much power in the first place? We have all this power because like a couple of us have like an assault rifle is like the biggest. I mean,
the idea is if they change enough rules, people will riot. This is basically how I understand it. Is if they change enough rules, the concept is a bunch of people are going to riot about it or get angry or something like that. Say if they shut off the food supply or they start doing things that really, they turn off the internet in America, people are going to lose their fucking mind. Right?
How do we watch porn?
Exactly. Because you give people a bunch of shit and then when you take
Seriously,
it away, people
I
get,
don't know what I would
people
do.
Get weird. And so the other thing is
why I get that, but what have they changed?
The Department of Homeland Security has purchased 2 billion bullets. Why does the Department of Homeland Security here in America, what threat is in America that you need 2 billion
so, bullets? What are they
I think the
do?
Threat is Americans having bullets.
Exactly. So if they're going to...
They shoot each other.
Yeah.
Right. But if people have guns and they're angry and then you have dudes rolling in with military
gear... You can still buy
gear,
bullets. Them buying 2 billion bullets doesn't prevent...
I think it's going to... I think it'll affect... I let's just see. I mean, that's
so, Jason. I don't mind. I enjoy going on the conspiracy ride with you. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm so sorry.
No. You don't need to apologize.
Cool.
We like it. We need the dissenting opinion in here.
I enjoy going on. It's like Pirates of the Caribbean.
It is the
Pirates of the conspiracy.
Conspiracy.
But I mean, I just think there's so many people that there's going to be some random crazy shit that happens. So there are going to be some crazy dudes that sadly go into movie theaters and shoot people up. There's going to be like I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched Frontline on PBS. Pretty good quality program. had a thing about Adam Lanza.
You watched it. So this, yeah. So the guy that made that, we did a thing on our podcast this morning.
Obama?
No, no. Obama didn't make it. The Frontline. The guy. What's his name? Coogan is the guy who made this. And this guy's a guy who's basically rewrites history and makes these weird propaganda pieces. It's like there's four,
such as
four. He did something on Lincoln. He did something on. Just the magazines that he wrote for. We went over his thing. I mean, that's the whole thing, is that they have three. They don't know anything about Adam Lanza, yet they're going to make a documentary about Adam Lanza's life so that they can talk about gun control. It's the whole point. They have four photographs of Adam Lanza. They don't know anything about him. His family members are like, I don't really fucking know him. It's like the story, if you investigate which
I just
sucks.
Feel like gun control is a weak motive because, first of all, no one's even going to do anything substantive for gun control. Like, it's not.
Yeah, it's also
it's always a political
it's not
loser.
Change. If the people that want to purchase guns, they're going to.
There's no way they're gonna take it. Oh shit, you can only have a 10 round clip instead of a 30.
The way I see it is the government more takes advantage of. So 9/11 happens. I don't think that George Bush, gave the thumbs up on it.
I do know that his father was having on the day of 9/11 had Osama bin Laden's father. They were meeting up.
His dad was dead. Long dead.
No, they are.
But Osama's dad had like
Osama's
eight
father
kids
and,
or something
and
like that.
George Herbert Walker Bush were oil buddies.
He had like a shitload. Bin Laden family was like huge.
They flew his family out of the country.
It's a huge family. Yeah.
His father.
It's like a huge Arab family. He has like eight kids or something.
But Osama bin Laden's father.
Right. I know. He came from Saudi oil. The Bushes were friends with all the Saudi oil
people.
So
you're saying the number one suspect's family member is in America at the White House hanging out with an ex-president,
mm-hmm.
and his son causes the largest quote-unquote invasion. Don't you think that the American people would want to maybe question...
He flew his buddies out of the country right after it happened.
I think that's crazy.
I just finished reading.
Yeah, but it's like it's not. I don't think it. There's no causal link there.
I don't know.
I think it's more kind of like shady, like him helping out his buddies.
Yeah,
because I watched Fahrenheit 9/11 too. Yeah. I remember all that, but I do think that there was a enough of a history and a pattern of sort of like. Osama bin Laden being the rogue son,
sure.
to establish like the dad is being a little bit more mainstream.
The dad's long dead, by the way.
Again,
it's a fact.
Oh, okay,
but again, though, I mean,
I just read The Looming Tower.
My thing is go back to the Sandy Hook thing. Then you have to believe. None of us have ever met bin Laden. We have to trust. That the information that we're getting that tells us anything about bin Laden, because also the CIA admitted faking one of the bin Laden videos. So you have to trust blindly that the information that you're receiving, no matter how bullshit or non-bullshit, you have to trust it blindly and then... Yeah. And that sucks.
Well, you have to think... Well, I mean, there's always going to be random coincidences and random...
I'm turning into a prepper, guys. I gotta be honest, man.
Here's the stuff that, like, so 9/11, it wasn't a conspiracy, but there was a lot of bureaucratic bullshit that allowed it to happen. So the CIA and the FBI and the NSA didn't talk to each other and share information, which allowed it wasn't on purpose that they allowed it to happen, but the information did get
all of these theories. Go back to assuming people are really smart and in control, and I just don't see that in life. I don't believe
that they have this big master plan.
Yeah, I don't think people are smart enough to think beyond like one or two chess moves.
I also don't think people are smart enough to hold on to secrets like this. The amount of people that it would take to do something where Aurora, where 12 people get killed and whatever, 100 people get shot.
I mean, my whole thing is I think what I'm getting from this is I don't know what this true story is, mm-hmm. and I can't trust what the true story is because I hold. I don't. The information that we're getting from our news is the news doesn't investigate itself. When the news doesn't investigate certain things that should be investigated, and they don't do it, and they call and they're called out on it, they then term you conspiracy theorists. They term you a truther. And right. if there's some bullshit that happens with something, I as a human being, I as an American citizen, I as whatever the fuck, owe it. If I say, hey, you're the news, you're our free press, you're not doing your job, they brainwash and they say, how dare you? How dare you challenge us?
There's a difference between saying that they're not giving you the full story and saying that they're deliberately misleading you. Like, those are two different...
I think that news is... When you add money to news, you don't get... You get agenda. I mean, that's just simple cash math.
Yeah, but it's not an agenda to... brainwash. It's just an agenda to make money. More money.
Yeah, but but who's paying for the commercials? You've got drug companies and banks. I mean, watch CNN, who you don't want to offend the drug companies, the banks, and the government influence that's coming in. So you're not going to say, hey, 9/11 was an inside job. You guys should investigate it. Look at all this evidence that we found towards all. Look at all these fingerprints of the CIA. They're never going to do that, and we can't. That's why you can't turn the word truth into something negative. That because you've taken a positive word. I want to know the truth. You're a truther. Well, that means that you're in a fantasy land and you want to remain in the fantasy land. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm done.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
Hey, can we actually? Well, how about this? I you know what's always intrigued me are all the crazy alien conspiracies, the Area 51 shit.
Totally.
That's awesome.
That is total. I mean, and none of it. You know,
Hollow Moon. Transparent segue.
Yeah,
Hollow Moon guys.
Well, he wanted to stop, and I kind of wanted to segue.
That's the thing is, you start getting deep into that shit. You sound fucking nuts, man. I sound crazy right now.
Yeah.
Well, I'm willing to allow for a certain amount of information. Discrepancies and falsehoods, because that shit happens. But when you tie it back to some grand plot, I'm just like, no, I don't think.
I think people are organized
and smart enough to do
that. I think most people are pretty stupid.
Yeah.
Overall, most people are pretty dumb. And I just think it's the news organizations just want to make money. That's all they care about. I don't think that money is coming from.
I'm sure they do a lot for laziness where they're just like, oh, the CIA told me this, so I'm going to tell you that. Like, I'm sure that happens. But
100%. Most
people. But I don't think they're like, oh, we're totally in cahoots together and we're going to make you think this so I can take away your guns.
I do believe most people are stupid and lazy.
For sure.
That I believe. And I think most people will want to make the easiest dollar they can. And, you know, that goes to the heads of news organizations where it's just like, you know, let's just report whatever's easy and whatever sells.
Jason, how much weight do you give to the secret society conspiracy theories?
Secret society? I mean, I don't see
Skull and Bones?
Yeah, Skull and Bones and all that stuff. See, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if any of this shit's real because all I do is hang out in an apartment all day and go to work. I don't know. I sound passionate about it, but I don't fucking know, man.
I think the secret society stuff is, I think that's your lazy man's conspiracy theory.
Well, it's that goes, secret society goes with, yeah, that all goes. We're all talking about the same
Freemasons.
Stuff. Yeah, all that stuff.
Who's the most powerful?
I mean, I think that what the Illuminati is supposed to be, the Illuminati, the elite, the Illuminati.
It sounds really cool, too.
But, well, it's on the back of our fucking dollar, which is weird. So what's that about, guys? But like, so we could be talking about all this bullshit. It's on the back of our dollar, so maybe we should address that. But
would you say that our president's taking orders from the Illuminati?
I think that I can conceive. I can't. I don't know. I have no fucking clue. But I can conceive that people who've in the last 1,000 years, families who only interact with other family members and continue their bloodline and all that weird shit. I believe that those do exist.
Mormons?
What's that?
Mormons?
Kind of in that same regard, but like in the. Like the royal families, the Bushes, like, you know, these families that keep it in the bloodline, they believe that their bloodline is sacred, just like we were talking about in the last episode. And I do, I think with like the Masonic stuff, there is, people talk about it, and I don't know a lot about it, but there is a lot of what they like, basically satanic, quote unquote, ritualistic things
with
that
the Illuminati
these,
and
that
and
these
the
people practice. Yeah. Yeah, and so that can't be disputed.
Yeah, I've read about that stuff.
Well, I mean, hey, they work. They work at the place called the Pentagon, and that's a shape that's inside of a pentagram. So you can check that out.
It's like an upside down goat's head.
Don't forget today. It's Pentagram Thursday. We're gonna eat cake and we're gonna talk to
sacrifice the virgin.
Sacrifice the virgin.
Everybody, bring your goats.
If you forget one, you're not allowed.
If you forget your goat's blood,
you put a dollar in the goat jar.
Oh man.
Oh, Doug. The goat jar. Every week, put money in the goat jar.
Wait, I want to hear about.
You know, you keep doing it. You buy us a new goat.
I want to hear about Adrian Grenier's band. That's what I want to hear about.
Oh, yes. Well, that's a way to lighten it. That's a good way to lighten the mood.
The whole,
it's an
the
inside
whole
job.
Thing with Adrian Grenier was so funny.
Old man Grenier.
I watched all those episodes.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. Oh, man.
Of the Jason Dove Diaries, for those of you guys who want to seek it out on YouTube.
Yeah, series one is all. It's. I did 20 episodes of Dove Diaries.
When was that?
I literally did.
I was just laughing. I forgot how fucking funny they were.
Oh, man.
It was so good.
I did 20 episodes. I did them in 2007 and 2008-09.
Also, quick side note, you made that one-off video. Or no, it wasn't a one-off video, but the ones you've been doing with, what is it, Treat?
Oh, Treat Street. Yeah, I did that one. I did Clang. There's a few of them.
When I told you I loved you, I lied. You guys are drinking Taka and Squirt?
Yeah, Taka and Squirt. Just doing it up like men.
There's something so funny about drinking the grocery store plastic bottle pinched handle vodka and squirt.
Squirt. It's so sweet despair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Dove Diaries thing, I did season two is all one. It's
let me just make one more comment. Your co-star's reaction to you telling him when I told you I loved you, I lied, beautifully understood.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. That's Tom. Tom cries. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good. Good. He gives good face. But anyway, so Adrian Grenier came to my. It came into my life. I want to say 2009.
Mm-hmm.
He plays in a group called the Honey Brothers.
Nice.
We didn't become the closest of friends, but in that short period of time, basically, I knew the guys that booked at this club, and they were like, dude, Grenier's coming to town. You want to do the show? And I said, sweet, let's play with Grenier. What's his band sound like? There was like two videos online, and we checked it out. And it just, you know, it looked like it looked nice. He's no film guy, so it looks nice. It sounded like a band. And we got there, and there's Grenier, and he's got this pack of dudes. And but it's Grenier, you know what I mean? Like,
just rolls with the pack of dudes.
Yeah, and he's the drummer, you know, and he's got all these musicians with him, and he's gonna. It's do fine, and so they set up, and they're all cool. They did their sound check or whatever,
right.
And my guys were there. We're all loading up. I mean, it was like kind of the spectacle to see him, and then we're like, what kind of crowd's going to come and see Grenier in Baltimore, Maryland, too, because it's like a weird place, and these people came in. It was like some, you know, normal people, and then some guys like autograph seekers with shit in plastic, like with like the.
They were only coming to get the Entourage guys autographed.
eBay.
Did they have like Entourage hockey jerseys that say like turtle on
it
them?
It wasn't necessarily Entourage, but more like they were weird like press red carpet shots, like really like printable shit you'd see on eBay for like $10.
There's people that
people that that's their whole living.
So just like had like publicity shots.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because even in San Francisco, I'll let you go. But like San Francisco. Sports teams will come and stay in the downtown hotels.
Yeah.
And you'll see old dudes with just a stack of photos that want any player that comes out to sign whatever they can. So it's Probably something similar.
Same thing.
They don't give a fuck about Entourage or
right.
the band.
Just famous dude. Yeah,
yeah, the famous yeah, dudes in town.
Police barriers outside the St. Regis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I work right near there. There's like police barriers and like it's bizarre.
But there's a bunch of big, such a weird there's a bunch scene. Of like fat old dudes with mustaches that will just hang out. Jason.
No, with
no. There's
Sharpie,
like there's yeah. like you know 60-year-old dudes that you know don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
and they're just there to get autographs, similar to I'm sure what you know what Adrian Grenier.
Yeah, it's Grenier, and I mean I've never seen Entourage up until that.
I like
point.
That. That's his name now,
Grenier.
Yeah. Grenier.
That's what I call him in the Dove Diaries. I'm just like, damn it, Grenier. I do that. But yeah, basically, so he,
you're wearing a wig.
Yeah, the whole time I'm incognito because I owe money. He played drums and he did his band played, and at one point in the end. They played for a really long time. They were like, it was like, you could tell the fans were like, all right, Grenier, like, come on, wrap it up. Wrap it up, you know, Entourage guy, I got to get home.
Nine-hour set, huh?
Yeah, and like the second to last song, he did come on stage. They had a little recorder, pan flute-looking thing tied to the mic stand. At one song, he did prance. Literally, there's no other word but prance on stage with the flute. And at that point,
like
the club
owner, the goat god or something.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. And literally, the club owner looked over at me, a friend of mine. And he was like, "What the fuck is this?" he's like, "What the fuck am I watching?" But that happened. And then who else was there? Was John Waters was there. He was in the audience. People were like walking up to him.
He's a famous
mind.
Baltimorean.
Yeah,
also lives in San Francisco.
Yeah,
is he really?
Yeah, I can't get away.
I didn't know that.
Did he move follow here? You here?
Or
did
yeah,
you
just do, I
he, lives here, he lives here part time. Okay. I actually researched it because I saw him and I was like, I don't know him well enough to like know right away. Like, boom, that's definitely John Waters. But I was like, I'm pretty
who
sure that guy
else could it be?
Who just walked by me on the street is John Waters. Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of weird people in San Francisco
true,
that would dress
true.
Like John Waters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I just looked up his Wikipedia and it said he splits time between Baltimore and San Francisco.
Followed Mr. Dev out here.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. Is I you see him a lot in Baltimore. He's there, you know, half the year, I assume. But he shows up. But it's like when you see him a lot, you know, like in the same areas, whatever. He goes to a lot of weird bars that I end up drifting into. So.
The bondage kind of bars.
No, just weird. There's old man, weird, creepy bars.
Yeah,
outside.
Creepy old man bars.
That's that's basically what they are. Like cover bands and weird shit, and then it's like, it's John Water pops out. Like, what are you doing here? Like, just weird.
So I came here to see Grenier.
Yeah. So Grenier, speaking of Grenier, I'll finish this up. But Grenier played, and then the best story of my whole thing was that afterwards we went to there was a green room for this club, and we went to the green room, and it was basically no one was in there. It was just me and like one other guy, and this one other guy from the band. Was a hired guy. He's like, yeah, I just met these dudes like 2 weeks ago, and they were just paying him money every night to like play bass. And so we're all hanging out for a couple minutes, and then the door kicked open, and I swear to God, 30 people just came in. It was like an 80s like TV movie party.
Yeah.
And
like bachelor party.
Yeah, totally. And it was all chicks that all were like, I'm hanging out with Grenier, you know? And he had a band guy. This is the rough part of the story. He had a band guy friend who's totally like just gave me the impression that he was just like, I'm on tour. I'm going to try to fuck all these chicks, you know, like I'm getting the runoff kind of thing. And and they were he's hanging out. And I remember he walked in this girl and it was like cold. It was in Baltimore, D.C., you know, coldness. And he was walking with this girl and he was like they're dancing to music and he's trying to take off her scarf. Like unwrapping it from her head, and she's just like, like looking at her friend, and her friend's like, "Should we stay?" You know, like totally, yeah. And then so at some point we smoked a bowl with Grenier, and Grenier has the best story ever. It's Grenier looks at us, and he takes his hit of weed, and he blows it out, and he looks at us, and he's like, the only thing he said to us the whole night, "What's Baltimore really like?" and we like looked at each other like the Grenier wants to know what Baltimore's like what do we tell him, you know, kind of thing. And we go to
what kind of poem did I yeah, like, what haiku is he gonna be down with that I explain this
Yeah, exactly. And we hesitate to answer, and this kid from D.C. is like, man, Baltimore sucks, like that. And then the music changes. His buddy, who's taking the scarf off the chick, but like puts on like Bob Marley something. And Grandier just like looks away from the conversation and like totally like has no idea where he's at. And he's like, looks up at the DJ and he's like, yeah, and just dances off. Like, he didn't even want to know the answer. He just was like,
yeah, that was just like a cryptic question for him to ask.
Yeah, let me get the fuck out of here. Cool.
What's Baltimore really like? Yeah.
I don't know why I'm reminded of this, but I was in Vegas this past weekend for a bachelor party, and I was walking down the street. We were really hungover, and we decided we were just going to take a walk down the strip to get the blood flowing a little bit. And walk by these two guys in very elaborate Transformers costumes. Mm-hmm. And as I'm walking by, like, it was like at the perfect moment. There was like a crowd sort of in a U shape. You know, they'd given them enough room in front, but they're in this parabolic shape around the Transformers. And we're walking around the edge of it. And right when I passed by, it was at the perfect time. There's this guy who's just kind of like, hey, transform! that was it, and I just kept walking. It was very funny to me.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, it's the one thing. Like, you're yelling at the Transformer to transform.
What else can you yell at?
Yeah.
Where's Bumblebee now?
Yeah. Transform!
All right, so you've had a run-in with Adrian Grenier's band.
Yeah.
You had a run-in with the Bacon Brothers band.
I did.
Are there any other actor music side projects that you've had run-ins with?
Maybe 30 Seconds to Mars.
30-odd foot of grunts.
30-odd foot of grunts, yeah.
Trying to think. Of,
the Boxmasters.
Who's that?
Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Thunderbox.
He had a different band name, didn't he?
Who's Thunderbox?
Sure. Thunderbox is Steven Seagal.
I would say...
You want the punani now?
the musician Daniel Johnston. He had a documentary about
Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Yeah, I backed him twice.
I never
Baltimore.
Saw that. What's that?
He seems like a swell enough guy, though. Just a little, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was an interesting experience because he's such an interesting guy. You know, I didn't really know, seen much about him until I saw the film as far as like seeing what he was like talking and not playing music. And
the film about? Is just him playing music?
He's very mentally ill, right?
Yeah. And he was basically like undiagnosed. So he's like this little like wiry kind of high-pitched voiced kid who wrote all these crazy songs and was like from a family that was like very church-going. I don't know. I think in Texas was where he grew up.
Yeah. He's from Austin. And he does art too, like kind of weird sort of
folk
cartoon.
Art.
Yeah, folk art. And his big break, right, was Kurt Cobain wearing a shirt that said,
he was on, he
How
got
Are
on,
You or whatever.
Well, he got on MTV.
Kurt Cobain's birthday today, 46.
46.
I have the isolated vocal track from Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Wow, 46.
It's a really good performance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not real. This isn't a joke, actually.
Oh, I thought you were going to hit us with some David Lee Roth.
No, it would have been good, but I don't.
I found a simple life. Ain't so simple. That's pretty good, Vince.
He plays a little...
the fucking whistle. Yeah.
Is that a slide whistle?
I got a David
really
Lee.
A slide.
It's like a
kazoo.
Ross story. Yeah. Did I ever tell that one?
No.
There's a David Lee.
Jesus,
yeah. You've been holding out on us.
It's a friend of a friend.
Is this
story,
a conspiracy
but...
theory that you?
No, this really happened. I mean, it might be. I don't know if I believe the source of the information.
All the money from David Lee Roth to Van Halen to Sammy Hagar
to the devil.
Sharonis.
To the devil.
Yeah.
To the devil. There's Satan in my David Lee Roth story. David Lee Roth, New York. He lives there. Manhattan, and a buddy of
mine. That's
the
town?
In Manhattan, yeah.
David Lee Roth, New York.
Dateline. He was hanging out. My friend was at this bar. I'll just say he's my friend. I was a friend of a friend. So this guy was hanging out at the bar, and he's hanging out, and David Lee Roth. This could be total fucking fake. Who knows? But David Lee Roth shows up. And the kid's like, holy fuck, you're fucking David Lee Roth. And he's like, yeah, man, wow. You know,
doing high kicks.
Yeah, you know, and he's, hey, man, what you want? You know, like, and so.
Hey, man, I'll tell y'all about it.
God damn it, baby. He's hanging out. And he's like, "Holy fuck, man! Like, hey, I'm having a few people hanging out later at my place. You should totally stop by." And he's like, "Fuck yeah, man! Whoa, you know?" And then he's like, "I'm just gonna get some weed." So he gets the dude's address, and this is before cell phones. And he's like, "I'm gonna get some weed. I'll show up later." And he just calls all his friends, and he's like, "David, I met David Lee Roth at a bar, and he's gonna come by my place." And all of his friends are like, "No fucking way." So they all go to his house and they're hanging out and they're like drinking beer, like waiting for David Lee Roth to show up. And they're just like waiting and waiting. And it's like 1 a.m. and they're like, "Where the fuck is David Lee Roth?" And he's not showing up. And so his friends are like, "Hey man, we're going to fucking go home, man. This is like bullshit. He's not showing up." And so they all split at like 4 a.m., man. Dude's like in bed and knock on the door. And he's like, "Wow, it's David, man. I got the weed, you know?" And he was like... And he was like, "Hey man, everybody split, man. I got to go to work in the morning." And he kicked David Lee Roth out. And he was like, and I would have like, man, I would have like called. I would have had David Lee Roth
called
my boss.
Called in Van Halen.
Yeah, call my boss. Like, "Hey man, he quits. Wow."
But, "He ain't coming to work today."
What was he? I see. Here's. I just think. What was he doing for like 7 hours?
He was getting weed.
I think when you're a rock star, like somehow you just learn to wake up at like 6 at night, and then
you just bump into shit for like 8 hours.
I don't feel tardy.
I brought my pants on.
Class dismissed.
Well, yeah.
You write Panama is what you do. That's what you do on your break. You go home and you write the lyrics to Panama.
Man, I tell you what. David Lee Roth is cheesed the fuck out, but you put Hoffer Teacher on, I will still bob my head to that.
Well, that's the one that starts like it sounds like a fucking...
motorcycle.
Yeah. And it turns into guitars and drums. Yeah.
It's just drums. That's all drums.
Yeah.
I got no love. Oh! Oh, yes!
Is this a soundboard?
There it is.
Yeah, that's all drums. That's all Alex Van Halen.
Yeah. The other Van Halen, man.
Which one was the one they fired? They fired the bassist, right?
Michael Anthony.
Yeah, now they got like Eddie Van Halen's
kid. They got Wolfgang Van Halen playing bass.
Oh, God!
Do you think that like at some point Eddie like just had to... He was like so disappointed in Wolfgang, he like... took his guitar away and just like gave him a bass, like, "Here,
he was probably like, "What do I need in the band? Like, you know, we can hire this guy."
Yeah, don't cheap have to pay labor as much. Yeah,
apparently Eddie was... I don't know, he might still be, but apparently he was just like a ridiculous drunk where he just get up and just start drinking wine, and then by the time they're supposed to practice, he would just be completely off his ass.
It's called alcoholic.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a video of him like in the 90s, and he's like so shit faced at like some... I don't know, it was like a Marshall something or other where they got him in a tight room. There's like 15 people and he's supposed to be there talking about guitars and bullshit. And he's like trying to play stuff and he just like, "I don't want to play that." And he just like, it's like low point and he can't play anything. He like just like...
I always wonder about like what's that threshold, because I've been playing guitar for a few years. I'm not very good at it. I can play power chords and some open chords and some basic lead stuff, right? But if I get more than 3 beers in me, it just like it's out the window. Like I can't.
There's a certain stage where you start playing weird stuff that you wouldn't play otherwise, and you're like, "Sure, oh, that was kind of cool."
But then you've also...
go over the tipping point.
But then you've also got someone like Slash. There's no way. Like, think about someone like Slash. He has to be getting tanked in your Appetite era, or Metallica, renowned, just complete and total drunks. You know, how are they able to still achieve the technical ability?
I think you gotta
muscle
learn
memory,
you
or
gotta learn that shit before you start drinking,
right? And so if, you know, if you've got enough muscle memory, it doesn't matter how drunk you get, or you have to...
I mean, I'm sure
it's gonna come out sloppier, right?
Yeah, but also it's like, you know, if you're just Slash starting out before Appetite for Destruction, man, you're probably just playing those fucking songs forever and ever until they're hot as shit. So then if you learn them, I've been playing Welcome to the Jungle for like 3 years.
Okay, fair enough. Like, I can black out and get home and not lose my wallet and keys because I've done that enough times.
I can't.
No? Okay.
Fuck no, man.
What do you lose, the wallet?
I left my wallet today in the bathroom of the radio station this morning when I did the podcast.
Why did you take it out in the bathroom?
I fell out of my pocket. Dude, I left. I thought I lost my keys all weekend. I searched my couch and I've searched my house. I thought I left it in the car. I checked everywhere, could not find it. And this morning, I was like going to get my girlfriend to drop me off at the fucking BART station. Like, I got to go do the show. It's 6 a.m. or whatever. And I'm sitting on the couch and I just went into the. And pulled out my fucking keys. I haven't seen them in a week. Like it's. I was like, how? I checked the couch like three times, man. Like,
and then in the bathroom, your wallet just pops up.
Popped right out. I lose shit so much. I like just shit falls off me. Like shoes.
Might want to think about this duck.
Hair.
Hair. There it is.
Oh,
look out!
Ooh. Oh, jeez.
Ooh.
Hey. Woo! Oh! God damn it, baby! No, I ain't lying to you. I'm only gonna tell you one time. Ah,
yeah. So as much cocaine as David Lee Roth was on, like, let's just take that vocal track from "Running with the Devil." There had to have been a producer standing behind a console, like. Even more coked up, just giving him like,
just nodding,
give me more, nodding, and putting his arms up in the air, like, give me more
energy,
more energy.
I think that guy's name. I want to say his name's Templeton. I don't think the.
I always
producer.
Picture producer.
Yeah, he did a lot of music.
Picture the producers from Death Clock.
He was the same guy that produced all these Michael McDonald songs. The same producer. I'm not even kidding.
Wow, it's aside, and we can get back to whatever, but you see Metal Gear is Metal Gear Revengeance.
Yeah, Revengeance, yeah. Which is a made-up word.
In Death Clock, there's the Revengeancers.
Yep, yeah. That's right.
They're the group that wants to take down Death Clock.
That was That was a great cartoon, and then when they went from 15 to 30 minutes,
it was weird.
It didn't hold up.
No, and it was so enjoyable at 15, and at 30... It's probably the type of thing if they did two.
Metalocalypse?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the problem is they went straight for, like, it didn't used to be based on gimmicks. Now it's almost unwatchable because every character, they're like, oh, what's this guy's gimmick? Just fucking hammer that gimmick a million times. So, like, it started out the Scandinavian guy would sort of do plural on most words.
It's
every single word. And, like, every single character, whatever his gimmick is just heightened to, like, an obnoxious degree.
But it was weird that it seems like the type of thing. This show is enjoyable for 15 minutes. It should be enjoyable for 30. And it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it's because now they have to, like, try and come up with a story instead. They're like, oh, well, it'll be funny if so-and-so says, many plurals.
I guess, but I was always very aware that if they tried to turn Aqua Teen into, like, a half-hour show, it wouldn't be as funny. I was always like, I'm really glad that this was, like, 12 minutes long.
It sort of gets in, gets out.
Right.
There's a time limit on randomness.
But, yeah, Metal Gear Revengeance.
Yes.
It instantly made me think of the Revengeancers.
Yeah. I will say, that first Death Clock CD was, like, really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, just the theme song is amazing.
Yeah.
I always like the coffee one.
Yeah, second one was good too, actually. Not as good as the first.
But. Going back to Drunk Guitarist, the thing that impresses me is, like, I understand Drunk Guitar because it's like it's muscle memory, like you can kind of go back to it. The thing that trips me out is there's some open mics where we share with guys that do like poetry and hip hop, and certain guys will get up there and it's like I go up there and I got like a fucking cheat sheet for 5 minutes of stand up, which is just free form. And some of these like poetry and hip hop guys will go up there and they'll do a song, and that song is like a whole goddamn one act play, like just spitting words, like rapid fire words, and they always somehow remember them. I don't know, it's crazy. Yeah, no notes. They just remember that.
Are your jokes? Your jokes aren't though like verbatim.
Funny or...
No, your jokes aren't like verbatim good. Word after word though. You're not memorizing like you know, like verses in a sense of rhyme or rhythm or
it's probably because I switch them around all the time that you can't
if you were preparing for say a 20 minute show and this is your like your this is you're going to be your you know big showcase show, you're not probably maybe you have a piece of paper up there just to keep you on track, but you're going to practice that shit 1,000 times.
Maybe five
maybe twice.
Well, that's the thing. You get a 20 minute showcase. You don't get to practice that 20 minutes. You get to practice 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. So like,
I meant more,
you're always doing it for the first.
Yeah, but the poetry dudes aren't doing it all over town. They're probably doing
true.
It at home.
Yeah, they got like one song that they do over and over again. Yeah, that makes sense. But speaking of which, last night there was the open mic at La Rocca's, which is over by Cobb's. And there was like these two just shit-faced, like 50-some-year-old Australians, and they were just heckling the hell out of the comics. And it was like movie accent Australian, where it sounded
two
like
Crocodile Dundees.
Yeah, it sounded like someone doing a bad Crocodile Dundee, like, "Oh, get on with it!" Like, what is it? What is he? Like, they'd forget what the guy was saying because they're too drunk. He's like, "What is he fucking on about?" And that was like their standard. And then
I always like when people look at each other and talk really loud.
Yeah.
Where it's like, "What's he fucking on about?"
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
And they're not looking at the comic at all.
And then Jesse Elias, who's like pretty, got pretty gnarly like Asperger's or something, where he looks down, like on a good day, he's like looking down and he's physically shaking from nervousness whenever he's on stage. And it makes him funnier. He's like a really funny dude. But and so him, he's trying to give it back to the hecklers, which was kind of amazing, because he's like, you know, he has like gnarly social anxiety on a good day when he's not being heckled. And when he's being heckled, like he's shaking like he's got Parkinson's, but he's actually giving back good heckler lines. It's like, "Australia, probably the only country besides the U.S. that has a chapter of the KKK. So yeah, it's pretty good one. And they would like, there'd be like a Filipino dude on stage, and the Australian's like, "Maybe you're too Mexican," like giving the wrong racial slurs half the time. Yeah, guess you had to be there.
I tend to like Australians.
What's that?
I tend to like Australians. I'd probably be annoyed with those Australians.
Yeah, it's rare that you find ones that are past the tipping point of, I think you combine drunk Australians with anything towards the arts, it's not a good combination.
Other than movies. Other than BM Band, or was it BMX Bandits? That was probably the greatest Australian movie I've ever seen in my life.
I still haven't seen that all the way through.
Oh, so good.
I've seen clips of like Nicole Kidman when she was like 15
Warrior?
Or whatever.
What's that?
No Love for Road Warrior?
Oh, Road Warrior. Yeah, good example. That's good.
That's one of my favorite movies ever.
That's about it, guys, for Road Warrior.
Someone was asking, I got asked to go on this thing for ESPN.com, and they asked me some sport movie questions that I didn't have a great answer to. Like there, let's see, what were they? There was a favorite football movie was one of them.
Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday is really good.
You know what I said though? The Replacements is terrible, but it's kind of good. Like I've watched it like six times.
So a couple of my friends love it. That's Shane Falcone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Falco.
Yeah, I think it's
Falco.
Yeah.
Like Rock Me Amadeus.
Oh, you know, well, I don't know if The Last Boy Scouts counts as a sports movie.
Ooh, yeah.
But that's
a gray area. Good one. Yeah. It does have football in it.
What about Rudy? Everybody loves Rudy.
Yeah. I don't really go in for the uplifting stuff so much.
You like some dark.
Well, I like either sort of bad good or.
What about Radio?
What was that one with James Vanderbeek?
Varsity Blues.
I think I like Varsity Blues better than.
Well, there's a lot of lot of bad good. There's Varsity Blues is bad good. Any Given Sunday is pretty bad good. Program's pretty
say
bad
program.
Good.
Yeah.
Program's
yeah.
really good.
Program's really awesome.
The Replacements also pretty bad good.
The Revengeancers.
I never really liked The Replacements that much.
Really?
Neither did I.
Stupid.
Yeah.
I liked the program.
It is stupid.
I liked the program a lot, and I liked Any Given Sunday a lot.
Yeah.
All right. What else did they ask you?
Sports comedy. That's an easy answer for me.
Well, you got Slapshot. You got
Slapshot,
Major League.
Easily.
Yeah.
Well, I'd probably go Happy Gilmore. over Slapshot.
Major Fair. League.
Yeah, I said Major League. Yeah.
Oh, you said that?
Yeah, Major League.
I just co-opted your
No, good, great minds.
I think a lot of people are going to say Caddyshack, but honestly, like, I think by the time I saw it, Caddyshack was a bit fucked out, and then B, I feel like I remember the naked scenes more than I remember the funny scenes.
I agree with you
scenes.
Completely. I think it was probably like, I don't know, I was probably like 20 years old the first time I saw Caddyshack.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was like a little fucked out by then. Also, I think it's a funny movie. Yeah, it's
no,
okay.
Not going to bash
if
it.
If I saw it on cable, I probably would keep it on the channel. But there's people who talk about Caddyshack like it is on the Mount Rushmore of all time great movies. Yeah. And I'm like,
it has
I
more,
don't think it's that
it
good.
It has more awesome lines than it does as a whole movie. Like Judge Smale's lines are always amazing. And, but yeah, as a whole movie, it doesn't hold up as well as you'd like.
Here's my
Slapshot is fantastic.
Here's my
Hammerhand. Your wife sucks pussy.
Here's my rationale for why I put Slapshot over Happy Gilmore or Caddyshack. I think if we were the right age when we saw Happy Gilmore, thus it's hilarious. And to everybody who was the right age when they saw Caddyshack, it was hilarious. I didn't see Slapshot. Slapshot is from like the fucking late 70s, and I didn't see it until I was 25. And I watched it, and I didn't even really know anything about it. And I watched it, and I was like, holy shit, this is fucking funny. You find
Rich
me a
Dunlop.
Like, how many comedies from the late 70s are still funny 20 years later? Yeah. Like, almost none.
I like Better Off Dead.
Ogie Oglethorpe.
It's a skiing movie.
Yeah. I forgot about that one.
That is a great movie. Yeah. That is so insane.
That's
$2!
Totally. So many good, so many good cameo people. One of the best villain guys.
Yeah, and then like the two Asian guys who talk like Howard Cosell.
right.
Just such a strange choice.
Right. So
which
weird.
I just love.
It's so good.
Insane. What else is there?
Boogers in there?
There's favorite sports.
Yeah, Boogers in there.
Favorite sports chick flick, which is odd
sports
category.
Chick flick.
Favorite
I was thinking we could still go with sports comedy. There's still more we could
oh, yeah.
go with.
I liked Goon. Did you ever see Goon?
No, I heard that was really good. I need to see that.
It's not real. Okay, here's the thing. It would be really good if not for the Jay Baruchel plays a like character that's just really obnoxious and doesn't need to be. And then the girl character is like the perfect girl as written by a guy sort of character where she's like, I don't want to sleep around anymore. Why won't you believe in me?
Right.
For some reason, every male screenwriter is like, she's just a wounded dove. Like she needs someone to believe in her somehow.
I believe in that.
Yeah.
What other sports comedies? Maybe we have covered all of them.
A Sporcom?
Sporcom.
Well, I wouldn't put it in the Pantheon, but the other Adam Sandler one is one of his probably last decent movies is Waterboy. Well, not awesome,
yeah.
but
I like Waterboy.
I enjoyed it.
That was like right. That was right as he was hitting the down
yeah,
slope of his career.
I like Waterboy.
I always like.
I'll allow it.
I always liked that Bobby Boucher was supposedly retarded basically, but he was always really he had very smart things to say.
Mm-hmm. And he was really into water. That was a weird thing.
That's like a whole genre though. Sport comedy. Dodgeball's another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The basketball one.
Basketball.
Basketball's funny.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever watched basketball all the way through. I pretty much enjoy everything that Trey Parker and Matt Stone do, though.
What else? Did we cover all of them?
I think so.
I think that's all of them, yeah.
They also asked, okay, they said...
Oh, Bull Durham, which...
Bull Durham, yeah.
I think it's okay. It's one of those that you know... people swear by.
Did we say Major League 2?
Back to the Miners.
I like how they just replace Wesley Snipes with Omar Epps. And they're like, yeah, we're just going to... Hey, he's a black guy. Whatever. You'll like it. You'll still watch
it. Totally.
I remember that was the first movie I ever watched with a hangover and just being like, this isn't good at all.
Bad News Bears has to qualify somewhere in there.
I think Naked Bad Gun...
Does Naked Gun count?
It's got O.J. Simpson and the California...
And Enrico Palazzo.
That's not quite that fair, though, because I think Naked Gun might be my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah.
And I'm not joking.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah. Hey, the umpire's Enrico Palazzo! I mean, that's just... And that whole first scene where
he tries to kick down the door, but he kicks through the door, and then his leg is sticking through it, and then it swings open, and he puts his hand on the stove, and then his face goes in the keg. I mean, it's just like, it is just pure nuts, brilliance.
Nuts,
it's,
yeah,
it's so good.
I don't know what it is where they can't make good spoofs movies anymore. Because God, some of the old Zucker Brothers movies were so incredible. Like Naked Gun and Top Secret.
Yeah. I think I told this story on the Frotcast before, but when I was in third grade, I was spacing out in class and I started thinking about the Naked Gun. And I thought about the scene where he's got the clip-on microphone on his shirt. And then he goes and pisses, and he's like, da, 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 yeah. And then he starts farting, and it's such a great scene, and I still laugh at it. But at that point in time, I was bored and spacing out in class, and I thought about it, and the sheer thought of it just sent me into this spastic laughter that was so disruptive to the class, I actually got sent to the office.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How dare you laugh that hard?
Yeah.
That reminds me of the... me getting sent to the principal's office after a bird pooped in my mouth. because I told the story before, didn't I?
No, I've never heard
right so. Into your open mouth?
All right, so I'm on the swing. I'm in third grade. I'm on the swings, and I'm swinging on the swings, right? I'm swinging back and forth on the swings, and I look up, and I see this bird pass by, and the poop somehow lands right between my lip and my front teeth, like if I just took a dip of bird poop.
Oh my god,
that is insane.
And so I'm telling people about. Of course, I'm like telling everybody about this afterwards because how amazing is that a bird's poop landed right in my mouth.
I would have cried.
Yeah, and
I would have just cried and went home.
And
I got bird poop in my mouth.
And some girl overheard me, and she told the teacher, "Hey, Vince just said he was got bird pooped in his mouth," and because she thought I was making it up. Obviously, me being me, and I got sent to the principal.
Did you still have poop in your mouth?
I was like, "No, but it really happened.
Look, I'm dipping poop right now.
Smell my breath."
And did they see the bird poop in your mouth? What they believe?
Well, this was after like I already spit it out and washed my mouth out and played recess and then came back in, and then I was telling people after we got in the classroom.
Hey, guess what happened at recess? What'd you do at recess?
I was on the swing set, just going to town. Bird poop right in my mouth.
I bet my recess was way cooler than yours.
See, if only they had phones, you could take a photo of it.
I know, right?
In your mouth. Yeah. Look. I've got evidence.
Yeah, they tried to pull that pics or get the fuck out shit on me. And I was like, hey, boom. Talk to the iPhone.
Talk to my iPhone.
So there's also a favorite sports chick flick, which is an odd category.
Does that even exist?
Jerry Maguire is the obvious sports chick flick.
Bring It On.
Coyote Ugly.
Interesting. I went with Summer Catch with Freddie Prinze and Jessica Biel.
I was going to ask if that counts.
Yeah, I think so.
Especially with Freddie.
I mean, there's every sports movie's got a chick in it. If you think about,
that's true.
Thrashing, you remember the skateboard movie?
Yeah,
it's got a chick in it. What's that? There's North Shore, the surfing movie.
Young Blood.
Brad.
Oh, Young Blood. Young Blood's great. I like how there's the hockey fight at the end where they duel with sticks first. It was like, I've never seen that in a hockey fight
before. I would put Rad, by the way, into one of my top movies.
Rad is really good.
But I think chick flick entails a movie that a female would want to watch.
Right. Now we're a bunch of dudes and one breaks off and humps a girl.
Yes. Yeah. That's the difference.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be... Summer Catch, not bad. It looks like Freddie Prinze is like, no, seriously, I can throw okay with this arm. And they're like, no, throw it the other one.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks like a right-hander. Like a left-hander that they made throw right-handed.
Like, seriously, no, I can throw a normal left-handed. Throw with your right arm. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking about.
But man, Jessica Biel in the pink bikini.
Oh,
in the pool.
My God. It's some insane shit. That's what I was thinking when I watched Eastbound and Down. I'm always like, wow, they couldn't just like bring in a guy.
They started doing that though.
They don't even have to bring in Tom Glavin. They just have to bring in like someone who
pitched. One of us.
So yeah. Someone who played Little League. Yeah.
They started doing that.
So ridiculous when he throws.
They went to a stunt thrower. You could tell.
Did they?
Yeah, okay. Because
maybe he just trained.
I'm gonna go with the stunt pitcher.
There's also...
So you was this one-on-one, or were you part of a panel or something?
I'm supposedly going to argue with another person, but these were just the preliminary questions, and I was like, well, we can talk about them, because why not?
If they get you pinned down, just say, just go for the money. Just show me the trail of the money. Just do that in any just argument.
Connect the dots. Yeah,
just connect the dots.
They also asked worst sports movie ever, which is a really tough one. Because I feel like almost all of the best sports movies ever could also double as worst sports movies ever.
Well, but there's some that probably, I'd have to think, but some disappoint, some were shitty. Some you don't want to watch again, where there's the ones that, you know, even for you, The Replacements wouldn't go down as an amazing movie.
If
but
someone
you
said
it
was the worst ever, I would be like, I could see that.
Okay.
It's pretty bad.
Well.
That's a great question. What's...
You know what I think it? Well, I just saw it, so it's kind of cheating. Because I feel like worst movie is always a weird thing to name, because if it's bad, you sort of just forget about it or you just avoid it. But I definitely saw Here Comes the Boom, and that was bad because it wasn't even bad good. It was just sort of...
Just bad.
Bleh. Like we farted. Like someone wrote an outline for a movie and didn't even bother to fill in the in-between stuff.
What's the one with one of the Wayans brothers where he's like a ghost basketball player?
I don't know.
Ghost Dad.
They've had so many bad movies that you don't even remember about. Like that guy Craig Mazin, one of his credits that I didn't even mention was for that movie Senseless, which I think had like Sean Wayans, where he like lost his sense of taste or something.
I think it's
weird
called
thing.
Sixth Man or something like that.
What about Juana Man?
There's Juana Man.
Yeah, Juana Man.
There's
Celtic,
Eddie. What's the one where
Celtic
Whoopi?
Pride?
Eddie.
Yeah.
Eddie's one. Yeah. Celtic Pride. They steal Damon Wayans.
Isn't that the one?
The Fan?
No, The Fan is with Robert De Niro and Wesley Snipes.
Oh, right.
Wesley Snipes plays like a Barry Bonds type guy. Another one that was good, Above the Rim. I enjoyed that.
Field of Dreams.
Yeah, there's that one.
That was another one.
It's a classic.
I'm trying to think of other really, really awful ones.
And All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise.
Oh, Days of Thunder.
Yeah. Ooh.
I kind of like Days of Thunder. I'm not going to lie.
I enjoyed that.
I'm not even naming crappy ones. I'm just naming the ones I remember. I'm just like, watch
everyone,
ones.
Everyone. Just
sport movies.
Like I said,
I don't think Celtic Pride's the one where he's dead.
I don't think it's Celtic, though, because it's the Celtics.
Celtic. There is one with a dead ghost basketball player, right?
I don't know.
Space Jam.
Oh.
There are some people, like, if you're born in the mid-80s, you will defend Space Jam to the death like it's an actual good movie.
Yeah, I know.
It's weird.
People are really into that. And they're also really into that. The website still being the same as it was when it came out.
Space Jam and the fucking Sandlot.
Sandlot, right.
It is called The Sixth Man.
Nice work, buddy.
I'm thinking specifically of Danger Guerrero when I think of
research skills.
Space Jam and Sandlot.
Sandlot's got to be one of the best sports movies. I love The Sandlot.
I don't know. Really I don't know. Even when I was a kid, I didn't like kids' movies.
There's some rollerblade movie.
I still love The Sandlot.
Well, there's the rollerblade one where the kid goes out to Cincinnati.
Yeah, and he's like a surfer guy.
Yeah, Airborne, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah, I remember Airborne.
Is that what it's called, Airborne?
Well, there's Airborne, and then they're Gleaming the Cube.
Oh, well, the Gleaming the Cube
was actually good with Christian Slater.
Yeah. It's such a weird story.
And a young Tony Hawk where he's got the cool, like, he's got the cool 80s do where the bangs go over one eye.
Yeah,
and it's just shaved on one half.
Yeah.
The girls wear that rock hat now.
The half Danzig.
Yeah, it's like the Miley Cyrus now.
Yeah.
It's the Skrillex.
Yeah, it really is.
His is way longer, but yeah.
And cooler. His does the 900.
And more modulated.
There was some weird high school. There was some weird high school class that came to an open mic on Monday. Like they were from somewhere else and they were on some sort of weird field trip.
I think it was detention.
To watch. No, it was the weirdest thing ever. And they all had those haircuts. Like, they all had those crazy screw. Like, the girls they either had, like, a shaved head or, like, a shaved on one side. And, like, there was a lot of nose rings.
I love that. So they got to go to see a bunch of dudes talk about their penises.
Yeah, it was weird. It was really weird.
Wow, that's so fun. It would have been painful to watch, I would imagine.
Well, I learned that my material does not do great with high school kids.
Yeah.
Shockingly.
No way.
Hey, do you guys want me to read the reception section of The Sixth Man?
Yeah, I'd like to know how it did.
Yes, please. Please do.
That was a rhetorical question, but I'm glad you approve anyway. The Sixth Man has a 23% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes and an average critic rating of 3.8 out of 10 based on 13 reviews. That's the most damning thing. Only 13 people even bothered to review it. Roger Ebert said of the film, The Sixth Man is another paint-by-the-numbers sports movie, this one about a college basketball team that makes it to the NCAA finals with the help of the ghost of one of its dead stars. Let's not talk about how predictable it is. Let's talk about how dumb it is. Movies like The Sixth Man are an example of level one thinking, in which the filmmakers get the easy, obvious idea and are content with it.
Wow.
Sean Wayans really needs to improve his Q rating.
Yeah, I'd stick with Above the Rim, Rad, and Happy Gilmore, or Any Given Sunday.
Best overall.
Yeah, I'd have to think about those.
If we're just going best overall and Last Boy Scout counts.
You're going
Last Boy Scout rocks balls.
I love The Sandlot. I'm surprised you don't like it. I think it's a great movie.
Like I said, I don't know.
Consider it a kid's movie. I don't think it's like an adult movie.
I might have thought it was a kid's movie when it came out, and thus I was already just...
jaded.
I was already dismissive. I was pre-dismissive.
He was dealing with bird poop in his mouth, Brendan.
Yeah. He's taking bird poop dips.
You changed after that day.
That was when I grew up, man.
He was dealing with a conspiracy that no one believed. Bird poop in his mouth.
Been an adult since I was 8.
You had to prove it, man.
It went all the way to the top. Obama told people that a bird didn't poop in your mouth.
Well, you start chipping away at their
benefit.
You chip away at their rights.
What if it was a drone juice? What if that was what fell in your mouth? Drone juice.
You know, it didn't taste organic now that you mention it.
I got to imagine the drones have to be chum for the conspiracy theory sharks.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's no telling, man. But there's been photographs allegedly of that I've seen on the internet. If you Google
Obama
it.
Riding a drone.
Oh no, of drones over Oakland.
Oh really?
Yeah, there are drones in
Oakland. I always enjoy the Onion stories that get taken as real.
By far.
There was the one recently where it was his inauguration speech. That there was a picture in the Onion of three drones flying in formation in the Onion, and Fox ran with it. That's like, and then the comments after were, of course, something like, "Well, it's not even real, but I could picture him doing that."
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You don't have to. You can just hint at it.
Doesn't even have to be real. No. It doesn't have to be real.
Someone will Photoshop it to be real.
Oh, I could do that.
Yeah.
Give me 10 minutes. Give me 10 minutes, I'll put a cat gif in there, too.
You know what? It may be subtle, but Keanu Reeves will be in there in the background.
I haven't used him for a while.
What? What have you been doing?
I was going to say, a lot of the old standbys haven't made an appearance in a while.
I'll get back into it.
Vince Vaughn with Ice Cream Cone. Mm-hmm.
Wait, so neither Vince Vaughn nor Keanu Reeves have been around?
It's been a few. I'll get them back in there. I'll start working them back in.
Here's what I'm worried about. What have they been doing?
I don't know. Maybe he's just...
I'm concerned that he hasn't... Maybe his ice cream is out of ice cream. Maybe Keanu finished his sandwich. Like, I'm concerned about them.
I'll tell you this. Allison wrote a really good fan fiction piece about Matthew McConaughey and Keanu Reeves meeting up in the park and doing it. It's pretty good.
Making sex?
Yeah.
Who's the top?
I can't remember. I don't know if there was a top.
They're both movies.
It's got to be McConaughey all the way, right?
Yeah, he seems... Well, I don't know. Sometimes you get the strong silent top. You know, the bottom's the... Sometimes you get
strong silent top.
Sometimes you get the bottom and he's kind of type A and he's all loud, but then, you know, the...
He wants to be put in his place?
Yeah, like the top is sort of like a Colin Firth type.
Good cop, strong, bad cop.
Silent top.
Like, couldn't you see Colin Firth as like a gay top?
I don't even know what Colin Firth looks like. I never saw The King's Speech.
He's in a million movies, though. Did you not see Bridget Jones 1-3?
Is he the guy with the sex tape?
No, that's
they
Colin Farrell.
Sex tapes.
Oh, okay, right, right. They all should have.
Colin Farrell probably has like 6 sex tapes.
Yeah.
Really?
He probably has.
I don't know. I'm sure he's got a lot.
He probably has more tapes of him having sex than he has times having sex that weren't taped.
Yeah. I read some interview with him where he was talking about like just partying in his 20s and how like an average weekend they'd take like 10 to 15 ecstasy pills.
Jeez.
It's like, wow, you are fucking partying.
Just yeah. just yeah, because why not?
I don't yeah.
Yeah.
Where's the proof?
Follow the money.
Follow the money, man. That's
Jason,
it.
It's Obama's got a big drawer, and if you could just get to that drawer,
yeah,
you would have all the answers.
I don't think so. I think it goes beyond.
Beyond.
I don't know. I feel so.
So
bad,
Obama is just a puppet in this whole. This whole.
Is that, bad. I don't think that's why we bring you on.
I don't think he's. Well, I feel bad for the listeners because I don't want them to think that I'm insane.
You're talking about a video game record holding. Dude who moved
here on accident?
Yeah, moved here on accident, you know?
And believes that maybe the Illuminati controls your thoughts? Like, whatever.
No, they don't control my thoughts.
No, mine, not yours.
Oh, okay.
You freed yourself from the Matrix. Right. I'm still in...
Right, you're in the Matrix. Yeah. Right, right.
You have freed yourself.
Yeah.
Give me the blue pill, please.
Oh, God. That's what I'm worried about is the blue pill, man. That's what I'm... I got sick... And I went and got a NyQuil, and it had the daytime and the nighttime, and I was like, "This is just like the Matrix. I can either take the
go to sleep, or you can be up for days."
Yeah, exactly, it was the same thing. What was the question?
So, who controls Obama?
Or
whatever president?
Well,
I
think it goes beyond. Republicans and Democrats. I think that it's a thing that's...
Well, of course, they're not that different in the first place.
Exactly. And I think that if you do... I don't know. I mean, I just think where's in the last 30, 40, 50 years, all of the companies have been buying each other out and getting smaller and smaller. So there's fewer companies that are more... And now they're more powerful. And when you have that as the basis or the heart of the country and the government... everything then becomes corrupt because then it does become a matter of following the money. So if you say, is it really Obama and his administration? I think they're a small cog in the larger scheme of things. I think if that globalist shit is real, if it is real, and there are signs that it could actually be real. If it is real, then yeah, that it is an agenda that's a long-term thing that has been in place. Why are there weird pyramids and shit that says New World Order on the dollar bills? Why is all that stuff there? I don't know, but you know, but it
was it Hulk Hogan?
What's that?
The New World Order? He put that there, right?
Did Hulk Hogan put the New World Order?
I think so, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a New World Order.
Yeah, that's why he dyed his mustache black, right?
The rest of NWO.
No, serious question.
Yeah.
Why are you not touring the country with Jesse Ventura?
Ventura.
You can even do Ventura in person.
Get in the plane, Jason.
Jesse, this is the wrong plane. We're not in Costa Rica.
Jason. This is Jesse Ventura. Yeah. I heard some of your stuff.
Hard hitting.
I was out there in Minnesota, and I heard your podcast.
I live in Baja.
Listen, I ain't got time to bleed.
Turn this podcast around.
I'm just saying, you two would make a good team.
I don't know. I think that's the thing, man. Like, part of me doesn't want to be a part of the Matrix, and part of me wants to know that.
Like, how they want you to think, though.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, that's the question.
I don't know. I want to believe that all of this shit's fake and that the real thing is that no one. Why do we have energy? Why do we believe in this whole thing of gasoline and this 120-year-old technology when we can make compressed air? We're supposed to be the smartest human beings that have ever walked the face of the earth, but we can't do what the pyramids and the shit that was built thousands and thousands of years ago with technology we still can't figure out. If we're supposed to be the smartest people, why aren't we feeding everybody and why are we killing people and saying that this is the rules, these are the commodities? If there's a finite amount of gasoline... then why do prices go up and down, if we're just going to run out at some point? It's just, it's all, that to me is like, why do we play those rules? Why do we say, okay, these are the rules, well, they just are. That, I think,
because it's really easy, it's way easier for you to just keep doing the same thing. Like, that's the history of every industry. People, they figure out how to do something, and then they get used to doing it. They bleed it dry because they just get used to doing whatever it was that made them money in the first place.
Oil companies want to squeeze every last penny out of every drop of oil on the planet.
And the whole paradigm is set up on this weird existence, on this thing that we're smart enough to...
It's not that weird, though. I mean, it's historically the same pattern as everything else.
So, like, you switch over to, like, TV... TV is going to change dramatically in several years, but Comcast and DirecTV don't want it to. They're holding on to this old model that they...
Because they've built up an infrastructure doing a certain thing.
Right. Oh, we don't want it to, change.
But that's the thing is like you get dependent on these weird things to make you comfortable. I think part of me wants to believe that we're positive and we should all be for, you know, the forwarding of mankind, loving each other and not fighting, not having commodities to where rich guys benefit all the time, and saying that I make up the rules that you can have this in this quantity. You're free. You're free. We live in freedom, and here are the rules to freedom. I don't think that we need to be told what the rules to freedom are, because once we're told what the rules are, then we're not actually free. So that's... But if you look at it like that, that's the basis of what the fuck is freedom. Like, describe to me what freedom is. Freedom is, well, man, I can have a cell phone. I can go to Chili's. I go to Applebee's, and then I can go straight to Walmart. That's not fucking freedom.
That's just a pretty good Wednesday.
Yeah, it is. That's going home to my parents.
We can also have freedom without there being a fucking.
But you need to compare. You need to compare that to a lot of the world.
And yeah, I mean, it's
a lot of the world doesn't. Whether you want it, call it commercialized, a lot of the world doesn't have the opportunity to listen to music without getting
And that shouldn't be the way. I mean, there's people starving that we can give them food and all that stuff. That's what I mean. Why are we're not progressing as a human race of people on Earth we have to allow things like, oh, I'm fucking into power and I'm into cash. I've invented this thing called cash, and now you guys have to play along. Civilizations have to play by those rules. I think we're smarter beings than that. And
I think we give the human race way too much credit.
I mean, I feel like you guys are weak at all as a powerful group. If we didn't have to go to our jobs and worry about money, and we did a little bit of things for food and this and entertainment and all this stuff, and sat there on a fucking cliff and watched an amazing sunset and fucking tried to use our third eye for good. Gentlemen, I think we can get to that hollow moon. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
This has been very inspirational.
All right, well, we'll see you on the hollow moon.
That's our message to you, the listener, this week. So you guys, I don't know if Jason's got plugs, but for me, definitely come next Wednesday, the 27th. The Hollywood Improv.
It's the pinnacle of your whole life.
It's $5 and it's from Maria Bamford and Paul Scheer.
And you.
And Greg Fitzsimmons. And me. And Joe Sinclitico, too.
Joe Sinclitico.
Sinclitico.
Can you call him that, please? Joe Sinclitico.
This is a cat. He could have a logo that's just a cat with a huge clit.
Wouldn't be a bad logo.
No. Oh, I really wanted to read you the... Well, it's too late now. Never mind.
All right. Well, don't forget it next week, even though you're going to forget it. All right.
Oh, can I plug one last thing?
Yeah, plug away.
Yeah, I was waiting for you.
Oh, I've been slow.
I thought you were going to talk about that earlier.
I should have. I'll get it over with real quick. On March 1st into March 2nd, I'm going to be producing the Eddie Winters Rock and Roll Coup d'Etat 25-hour-long podcast.
Introduce everyone to Eddie Winters real quick.
Eddie Winters is a guy I know who's a legendary 70s DJ. He started in the 60s, had a career in the 70s, and then got pushed out of radio because of...
conspiracies, probably.
Commercialization, and he's bummed about the Kennedy thing. And disco. Basically, disco chased him out of the radio waves.
What would he sound like if he was here?
And he does like, oh, yes, coming in at number 7 this week, it's gotta be, ooh, Van Halen with Wow! Something like that. I don't know. He's crazy.
So 25 hours of that.
25 hours of Eddie Winters. He's gonna
consecutive hours.
25, it's a marathon for charity.
I want someone out there listening to listen in a row to make sure that you don't stop. It's not a conspiracy.
Oh no, there's no the only pauses I'll be able to play one song. It's got to be under 7 minutes long.
Is there going
to
be a camera recording at all?
We hopefully will be live doing a video.
Otherwise, I doubt that it's real.
we're going to have 7 files that will prove
concurrent
in a court of law that this shit's real. Anyway, it's on mutinyradio.org, and it starts Monday, Western West Coast time. It starts at 9 p.m. Friday, March 1st, ends at 10 p.m.
So if you're alive at any point during that day, you just go on.
You can turn on. You can call in. I'll pick up the phone.
You have a weekly show as well, correct?
Yes, this is the weekly show, but we're doing a weekend edition, and
like NPR.
Yeah, and it's but it's straight 24 hours of, or 25 hours of live broadcasting. It's
so many hours.
Turn this plug around. Yeah, sorry, I should probably
end. Don't apologize for
but
that.
But I want you guys to come down, man. If you guys want to come down, we're gonna have skee ball machines and live Ouija boards.
What is it? March what?
First and second.
Oh hell yeah. Let's do it.
So
yeah, let's do it.
We're gonna try. It's a global podcast. We're gonna try to see who's the farthest away listener. If they call in, I'll give them a laser disc.
Let's do it.
Is Eddie Winter's big on laser discs?
He's huge on laser discs.
What's the one that he would never give away?
Probably JFK.
Nice.
I watched Criterion. I watched Navy SEALs on laser disc once.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I like 2001 on laser disc. One of my favorite movies.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
My my dad was big into laser discs, and at one point he got the Laserdisc player that would flip it internally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh.
That was a big deal. You didn't have to get up.
Nice.
That must have been a big player.
6 feet
well,
tall.
No, the laser it didn't flip the disc around. The laser went to the other side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it'd be like a CD player if you picture it reading the top.
Right,
then.
Okay.
Yeah. So bad. Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Good time.
Get one of those in my car.
Laserdisc player.
All right. Well, Jason Dove, thanks for coming on. Always thank fun talking conspiracy theories. Global podcast marathon.
Global podcast marathon.
Happening next weekend. All right. Well, thanks to everybody for listening. Frotcast@gmail.com. Send us some moderate length emails, and we may read them on air.
Probably, yeah.
Well, like we said, we read them all.
We read them all. I'm just saying on air.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, until next week. Good night and good chins.